that they did target journalists because one of them worked for Hamas. We'll look at that in more detail. Back here in the UK, the supposedly dream holiday venue down on the beach that's turned into a nightmare. LBC's Joseph Draper is in Bournemouth.
Drugs, disorder and brawls on the beach. This once idyllic seaside resort's been described as the new Wild West. I'm LBC's Joseph Draper, getting the reaction from locals.
Remember school days? Sir, miss, miss. Bit of a change from Education Secretary Bridget Phillipson.
Teachers can make that request, but of course what we'll be looking at is making sure that people are able to exercise their views.
As trans teachers can be referred to as MX, and now nearly 4 million people on what's called the no-work dole. Those stories are more after the 7 o'clock news.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, police forces have been told to share suspects' ethnicity and nationality with the public. It's after authorities were accused of covering up their backgrounds in several high-profile cases. LBC's Fraser Knight has more details.
The debate around this really reignited after two men were charged in connection with the rape of a 12-year-old girl in Warwickshire, where the council leader reported that they were Afghan asylum seekers. Well, the police said guidance wouldn't allow them to confirm that. Now the bodies that set police standards say chiefs can consider sharing ethnicity and nationalities to help stop false information spreading.
Facial recognition vans are to be rolled out in 7 more police force areas in England. The Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper, says the cameras will be used to find sex offenders or people wanted for the most serious crimes. It follows trials of the controversial technology in London and South Wales. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky has vowed to reject any plan to hand the Donbass region to Russia. He's warned redrawing Ukraine's eastern border would open the door for Vladimir Putin to start a third war in the future. President Putin will travel to Alaska on Friday for talks with Donald Trump. Mr. Zelensky has raised concerns about their discussions.
It's impossible to talk about Ukraine without Ukraine, and no one will accept that. But they cannot agree on anything about Ukraine without us. I truly believe and hope that the US president understands and realizes that.
European leaders, including Keir Starmer, will hold talks with Volodymyr Zelensky and Donald Trump later. There's been a jump in the number of motorists caught driving vehicles that aren't roadworthy. LBC's Tom Harrigan has more details.
You can get 3 points on your licence if you're stopped by police with defective brakes, steering or tyres. The RAC looked at how many penalties were handed out last year compared with the year before. It found there were more than 13,000 in 2024, up 50% on the previous 12 months. It's not clear whether officers are catching more drivers or there are more unsafe vehicles on the roads.
And the Treasury is said to be looking at new ways to raise money from inheritance tax ahead of the budget. It could spell changes to the rules, allowing money and assets to be passed on free of IHT. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen this morning at 91.47 after closing up 18 yesterday. The pound buy is $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy to start, then another warm and sunny day. Some thunderstorms could develop later. A high of 33 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
OK, everyone, so look at the numbers from Q1 and you'll see that there's a sharp...
Alex? Oh, I think you're frozen.
And that's why it's crucial that we make...
Yeah, that sounded important.
Because if we don't act now...
We've lost him.
Bring an end to work call interruptions with EE Wi-Fi Enhancer. More work-from-homers are choosing EE Broadband, the UK's fastest-growing broadband provider.
And he's back.
So I hope that was all clear.
To verify, see ee.co.uk/claims.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. It's 4 minutes after 7 on Wednesday, August the 13th. Strong words from the Palestinian delegation to the United Nations yesterday about the need for journalists and journalism to still try and penetrate Gaza. But Israel is sticking to that extraordinary defence. We'll look at that in more detail. Back to events in the UK, and we now know where we are about the transparency of the background of people upon arrest for certain crimes, something I addressed with the Chief Constable of West Midlands Police Craig Guildford, last week.
We're always striving to be transparent in everything that we do, but we're governed by rules. Rules are often set by Parliament, they're set by the CPS, the courts. We have to be really careful that we don't just make rules up as we go along.
Staying with policing matters, named and contactable neighbourhood police officers in place in every community, possibly from today. Plus, live facial recognition technology to locate and catch high-harm offenders. Home Secretary Yvette Cooper.
What we're doing is introducing a new legal framework so that it's used in a targeted way to make sure we can arrest wanted criminals, but also people can know that there's proper protection.
Turning off the taps, Thames Water now a virtual crisis, but a Chinese takeaway? As a Chinese company views it as a possible acquisition, we'll give you all the details on that. And there are now nearly 3.7 million people on what's called no-work dole. That means not only are they not in work, they don't have to seek work for whatever reason. It's grown a million since Labour got into power. Why do we allow this? Work and Pension Secretary Liz Kendall, I asked her earlier this year about a crackdown.
You will have to be in work. There isn't an option of a life on benefits. It is good for your future earning prospects and it's good for your health.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
What the Minister said there, indeed what the Secretary of State said there, is utter drivel. They've done nothing. It's gone backwards. A million more people not in work, don't need to seek work, and we pay them. Seriously? Now, some include the long-term sick, but up by 1 million? That's later in the show, as is the migrant hell that is now Bournemouth, as this supposed one-in, one-out scheme can be seen to be an utter failure, a 50% increase in the time since it was announced. That's to come as well. But let's go to global matters and the issues in the Middle East. The UN's Human Rights Office condemning a targeted Israeli attack that killed six journalists in Gaza, calling it a breach of international law. Five Al Jazeera journalists, including correspondent Anas Al-Sharif, were killed in an Israeli airstrike on Sunday. Two others were killed, including a freelance journalist the broadcaster has claimed. Now, Israel has received worldwide condemnation after this. The bombing was near Gaza City's Al-Shifa Hospital. Israel still says they have evidence that Al-Sharif was an active terrorist within Hamas. In an interview to Sky News yesterday, Lieutenant Colonel Nadav Shoshani, a spokesperson for the IDF, was asked about the validity of that evidence.
There's many types of intelligence that the IDF has about what's happening in Gaza. One of them, what we showed to the public, are papers that our forces were able to find in different locations within Gaza. Those are easy to declassify, relatively easy. There are more complex, more delicate intelligence that we have to treat very carefully, because intelligence that you declassify, if you do it in an uncareful manner, you can't use it the next time. And we know in real time, in the time of the strike, that he was an active terrorist in Hamas. He was, in addition to intelligence we have of things he was doing and conducting, we also have intelligence of the fact that he was on a Hamas payroll while he was on an Al Jazeera payroll.
Now, speaking with LBC yesterday, Louise Allion-Bichet, who's a reporter of Sans Frontières, said this was clearly a targeted attack to stop journalists operating in Gaza.
Very clear. It's another attack against journalists and this type of deliberated attack have been going on for almost 2 years now. And the goal is quite clear. Again, the tactic is known. And to us as Reporters Without Borders, the goal is clearly to have a complete information and media blackout of what is happening now in the Gaza Strip.
I'm acutely aware this story has been bouncing around for a few days, but it's been given fresh impetus yesterday by the Palestinian delegation to the United Nations. And here is the Palestinian ambassador to the UN, Riyad Mansour, in New York at a Security Council meeting, calling for more journalists to go to Gaza.
You need to send large delegations of journalists to go to the Gaza Strip to see with your own eyes the reality of our people and the crimes committed by Israel, and to report back on it. We do not trust the reporting of the Israeli occupying authorities about the reality in the Gaza Strip.
Let's bring into the conversation Ruth Wasserman-Lande, who is served as a Member of Parliament in Israel and is an expert in Arab affairs. when you see the defence being put forward by Israel for the actions regarding the journalists, how do you respond? Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for having me on your platform.
Not at all.
Very, very clearly, there are and there have been journalists, so-called journalists, in inverted commas, not all of them, but definitely those that have been killed, working for Al Jazeera and actually accompanying those Nukbas, or the terrorists, that went in on October 7th and documented themselves. There were so-called journalists accompanying them and actually live streaming all the atrocities and horrors, including opening the belly of a pregnant woman, and all of those things that were then put on Telegram and other social media platforms. Also, there were journalists who...
I wonder if we can restrict ourselves to those five from Al Jazeera. What evidence do you have that satisfies you that this was a valid action by the IDF?
So the IDF, as the spokesperson said, has indicated clearly that some things could be declassified, and they were declassified, and there were pictures provided, by the way, they're completely public, of the specific journalist, Anas, who was documented and documented himself in Hamas uniform.
But how recent was that, Ms. Musselman-Lande? How recent was that?
No, very recent. The guy is a very young man in the territory, in Gaza and elsewhere. It was not years ago. This is very recent.
Well, the tracking document that's been put out dates back to 2023. But even if we allow that this gentleman was in some way working for Hamas, what of those who were with him?
It's not in some way, sir. I would like to stress, these are men who work for Al Jazeera. Al Jazeera...
Are you telling me that all five of them, in your view, were Hamas operatives?
I don't know that, and I cannot give you that answer. I can tell you that Anas specifically...
So I appreciate your candor, thank you. So if you don't know...
You're welcome.
If you don't know, how can you possibly sanction the murder of what's possibly four innocent journalists, first allowing that you believe Anas al-Sharif to be a Hamas operative?
So first of all, Anas was killed not in a targeted manner and not because he is a so-called journalist, and I say this in inverted commas, but because he is a Hamas operative. I don't know regarding the rest.
But how can you justify that? I appreciate it wasn't your action. I appreciate it. And I'm very grateful that you come in as a former member of Knesset. But how can you justify four innocent journalists? Or I think one of them was a field producer. So go ahead.
I'm trying to answer. I can... And I do have the information that the Israeli policy, as opposed to what that French journalist said prior to my speaking, is absolutely not to target innocent civilians and or journalists. And any and all evidence that needs to be declassified to show that not only Anas, but the other four are not innocent civilians will be provided. There is no policy by the Israeli IDF and or government to target journalists. This is not something that we do. On the contrary, we are convinced...
But why is it then that figures from the two organizations, Independent Freedom Journalists and the CPJ, says that 274 journalists have been killed in various operations in Gaza, 269 of them are Palestinian? How can you possibly say the IDF isn't killing journalists?
Because the IDF is killing operatives that work for the Hamas.
All 274 now, are they?
They're all Hamas. The Hamas... it's a pity that you are laughing, because I'm...
I'm not laughing. I just find... I say to you, I find it risible that you want my listeners to believe of the 274 journalists who've died since the 11th of August 2025, numbers certified by two separate organisations, respectfully, 269 of them of whom were Palestinian. You want my listeners to believe they were all journalists. That's what I find risible.
So respectfully, sir, if I may finish a full sentence,
please.
Perhaps I will allow your listeners to have a little bit more information.
Please.
The Palestinian Gazans who have been hired by Al Jazeera to be so-called journalists, by the way, not a few of them had actually taken hostages and tortured our hostages. And this has been a proven point told by hostages that have been given back in agreed upon agreements with the Hamas. So those so-called journalists have been in Gaza, young people, they've been in the indoctrinating process of Hamas for the past 20 years. They have been so-called covering the so-called horrors of Israel and accompanying Hamas operatives all along.
All right, these all 274 people, then, you believe, lastly. All
first of all, 274 is a number that has been given by whom?
By whom? By the two separate organisations, the Committee for the Protection of Journalists and the Independent Freedom of Journalists Organisation. So both journalists' bodies.
Okay, so those journalists' bodies...
They're lying as well, are they?
Give the names, if they... Why are you putting words in my mouth, may I ask? Well, did I say that?
Because you've disputed every single figure that's been put
forward.
I've not
disputed. I am saying
you disputed Reporters Sans Frontières. I would imagine you will dispute these two. So that's three separate organizations that put these figures out, Ruth.
I have not disputed. What I'm saying is very simple.
Right.
The Hamas and organizations are saying that Israel is targeting journalists. I am telling you, Israel is not targeting journalists. What is happening is that Israel is targeting Hamas operatives that are killing our people, and by the way, killing Palestinians as well, on a daily basis, by the way.
I'm grateful for your time. Thank you. I must leave it there. Thank you for your time. Ruth Wasserman Lander is a former member of the Israeli Knesset and is an expert in Arab affairs. We'll get your reactions right after the 7:15 LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
Police have been told to disclose the ethnicity and nationality of suspects in more cases. Live facial recognition is to be expanded across England as part of an overhaul of neighbourhood policing. President Zelensky has warned Ukraine will reject any peace deal that involves giving up the eastern Donbass region. LBC weather, cloudy to start, then another warm and sunny day, a high of 33 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne. We're very busy on the M25 anti-clockwise heading towards Junction 5 at the M26. It's because the overnight works finish late. They have now finished, so all the lanes are back open, but it's still very slow. On the North Circular Road, the westbound exit slip road to the Staples Corner roundabout is closed. It's because a car has overturned and there are also delays as a result on the M1 southbound. Only one lane's open on the A40 eastbound at Gypsy Corner for the emergency works. That's causing delays back to Park Royal. The A12 is blocked northbound, and this is between junctions 18 at Danbury and 19 at the Borough Interchange. And that was after a car was on fire earlier. And on the train, southeastern services are delayed between Charing Cross and New Cross.
This is LBC.
Who's a good human? Jenny is, because Jenny will always do what's best for Bertie, her bestie Bassett. So if Bertie needs to go and wee, that's what they're going to do. Even if it is 3 a.m. and it's raining cat lots. That's why she also chooses Butternut Box for Bertie's meals. Freshly prepared, served straight from the fridge, and conveniently delivered right to your door. At a time that suits you for once. Hey, Jenny. Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
The road stretches before you, but there's trouble ahead. Stationary cars. You're faced with the McDonald's side mission. Do you A, join the ever-growing queue, or B, take the next exit and treat yourself to a glorious Mackey's?
Detouring to McDonald's.
Start your side mission today.
So, what are you watching at the moment?
Squid Game, Dad.
Let's watch it together this weekend. That'd be nice. What's it on again?
Netflix. You've got EETV, so you just switch it on.
What season are we up to?
Four. That's Stranger Things, Mum.
And what about the kids?
Don't worry, they'll watch Cocomelon for the 100th time.
Switch on Netflix with EETV, plus change up sports and entertainment. It's TV with the ultimate flex for the whole family.
EETV requires EE broadband. Separate 24-month contracts for TV and broadband. Content may vary, terms apply.
Pump six in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
Okay.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Have I won a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6.
T's and C's apply, subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
Brands that use radio are 49% more likely to get noticed. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org, assuming you want to get noticed.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
19 minutes after 7. Headlines in a moment, but let's turn now to a broadcaster and campaigner who has posted messages concerning the Middle East conflict and also has concerns over the treatment of journalists. Nicola Thorpe, who I've worked with in many TV studios down the years. Good to see you again, Nicola. Hopefully you heard most of what that former Israeli MP or member of the Knesset was saying. Your reaction to that and to the Palestinian delegation saying, let's get more journalists in. Morning, Nicola.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, unfortunately, I did listen to your previous guest. I mean, I find it outstanding that she would say that Israel doesn't target journalists, just as Israel doesn't target hospitals and Israel doesn't target children. You said yourself, you know, what possible justification can there be for killing these four other innocent people who were in that tent with Anas? Well, I'm afraid, you know, Israel have managed to justify the killing of 16,000 children and counting so far. Yes, I do think international journalists should be allowed into Gaza. Why should Israel be so fearful of journalism, so fearful of the truth? We saw the journalists accompanying aid drops last week and the week before, and even those journalists were being told not to film outside the windows. Why on earth would Israel not want us to know what they are doing in Gaza? And as a British taxpayer, I want to know where my tax is being paid on, and what on earth our government are doing, because currently the government are still supplying weapons to Israel and F-35 parts to the global market that could be used in Gaza. They are also providing intelligence flights over Gaza, and I want to know, I want journalists on the ground to tell me what my money is being spent on. But the thing is, Nick, we've had journalists on the ground this whole time. They've been local Palestinian journalists. But unfortunately, the second they're critical of Israel, they are accused of being Hamas members.
Should we be hearing more from the British Foreign Secretary or the British Prime Minister or others in your view, Nicola?
Yes, constantly. What we've seen here, the killing of Anas, is a clear and apparent war crime. On top of all the other war crimes that we've seen over the past 2 years, Nick, I think people like myself, I speak as somebody who works in broadcast, but also just as a citizen, I see daily these images of children, innocent people being blown to pieces, an entire land being destroyed. And I feel so strongly that our government, as allies with this nation, should be doing far more than it currently is.
Always enjoy speaking with you. Be well. Best to your family. Nicola, thank you. Nicola Thorpe, broadcaster and campaigner in that area. Coming to the first of the calls. Dennis, you'll be the first caller. Quickly to the front pages of the newspapers. And what is the picture that unites the Daily Mail, the Daily Telegraph, the Times, the Guardian and the Sun? Yes, there we go. It is, I would have thought, at least 80... probably more like 100 migrants rushing from somewhere in France. I think it may be Calais, it might be Gravelines, I don't know, trying to rush out. This picture is taken by the photographer who's in the water, sort of ahead of them. It's almost like, you know, when you see your children in a 100-yard sprint or whatever it might be. There they all go. This is, it's announced that 50,000 migrants, of course, have come here. And the number has actually increased since the one-in, one-out deal. So the idea, there's actually been a 50% lift since that was announced last month. That is the front pages, as I say, of those newspapers. One other story that we're going to look at is also the front page of the Daily Telegraph. Let me mention that. And I think the Daily Express goes with it as well, which is the idea that the inheritance tax now could face some kind of action in the autumn budget. The Telegraph, families face fresh inheritance tax grab. The Daily Express is the 8 million people on universal credit. Another story that we will be looking at. It's added a million since Labour came to power. 3.7 million people in no work and don't need to seek work for whatever reason. 3.7 million, no in work, no requirement to get work. The LBC app goes with the inheritance tax story. We'll have more for you in that in about 10 minutes' time in our regular look at the world of finance. And take another one at random, the Daily Mirror online. They say, no way, Beck. This is as Nicola Peltz Beckham and Brooklyn Beckham renew their vows. I mean, they only got married 3 years ago. Normally, I'll be doing it next weekend at this rate. They normally wait a time, but unfortunately, there does seem to be a schism in the family, which is very, very disappointing. Dennis is in Chelmsford. Dennis, respond to the numbers that we're hearing. 274 journalists killed now in Gaza. Good morning.
Hi, Ruth.
I'm Nick today. Ruth on weekends.
Sorry, mate. Yeah. it was because of Ruth that I called.
Ah, right. Okay, the contributor.
It was the word that came through, which I think that she used, was indoctrinated. And It's because of this terrible war. Both sides are becoming like that. They're becoming indoctrinated in their own kind of...
Interesting you picked up on that word. What did that word tell you then about what you were hearing, Dennis?
Well, I mean, it was almost at a point where she didn't even consider that the number might be factual, that these guys might be innocent, these people, these journalists might be innocent, that immediately it's, well, no, it's the number that's in question. We know for a fact that these journalists are working for Al Jazeera and they're also working for Hamas, etc. And it's like, well, how the fuck? You don't know that for a fact.
No, you don't.
And rather than consider you might be wrong, this is what indoctrination does. I mean, this is what war happens. You know, they get embedded in their hatred, and it becomes almost impossible because one generation, children are murdered, etc., and that's never going to be forgiven, is it? So,
well, let me give you my take on this. Of tragically, 274 journalists have been killed in Gaza since that October horror. Are all 274 innocent? No. I'm sure some of them were in some way involved with Hamas. Would you say they were all Hamas operatives? It's just, I'll use the word again, risible. Absurd. Yes. No one would believe that.
No, it's implausible. And this is what entrenchment does. It's a horrific thing. Sorry.
No, well done. Indoctrination. I'm interested that you picked up on that word. Dennis, thanks for getting started. John, you'll be the next caller on that. Now, let's turn to a story that's in all the papers that started with LBC, with political editor Natasha Clark, with whom you'll hear in a moment. She got the exclusive. Concerning trans teachers can ask their pupils to call them MX or MX instead of Mr. or Mrs. Natasha Clark joins me with the story now. Natasha, good morning.
Yes, good morning, Nick. So the government have been saying for years now, under the Tories, under Labour, that they're going to set out guidance for teachers and for schools about gender identity, sexual relationships, including trans rights too. The Tories kicked it down the road. They launched a review just before they left office. And now we're a year after the election and no closer to knowing when that might come. And with that in mind, there have been a string of reports that some teachers have been asking pupils not to call them Miss, Mrs. or Mr., but to call them MX or Mix. It's a non-gender term used by some trans people, some non-binary people who don't feel that they have a gender. So I was speaking to the Education Secretary, Bridget Phillipson, yesterday. I asked her, should children be using that at school?
Do you think it's right for a teacher to ask a pupil to call them MX or Mix?
I think, you know, teachers can make that request, but of course what we'll be looking at is making sure that people are able to exercise their views on this topic too. This has been the subject of various legal cases as well about people's rights in terms of how they approach questions of gender identity.
So that will be in the guidance as well, what they should be calling their teachers.
We'll consider all areas of the practical guidance that schools need and responding to the challenges that they tell us they've faced.
So you heard from her just then that teachers do have the right to ask. But as part of that guidance, she says, others, like parents, will be able to have their view too. Last night, the Department for Education told me that they could not, however, insist on it, and that all teachers and pupils should be treated with respect. Now, it's not completely clear who would have the final say on this decision. I'm told that it's usually up to the head teacher in cases like this. And I think, Nick, this just really goes to the heart of why schools and other institutions have asked the government to clarify the law here. And there has been quite a lot of reaction to this story, Nick. Fiona McKinney, the director of campaigns at the human rights charity Sex Matters, says that schools should not be teaching children that their teachers can be neither male or female. She urged the government to get that guidance out now and asked whether the government's priorities were identity or children's well-being. And the government are still unable to say when this guidance is going to be coming. The Tories' shadow education secretary, Laura Trott, told me last night, 4 months on from the Supreme Court ruling, and the Education Secretary is still stalling. The guidance is ready to go. Labour must provide that clarity for schools and safeguard children. Phillipson told me that the CAS review into sex and gender was still being worked through in government, and the implications of course, you remember, Nick, that Supreme Court ruling which said that trans women do not have the same rights within the law under the Equalities Act. And we are told that the Equalities Watchdog is expected to issue new guidance for schools, hospitals, the government within weeks about what this means in practice. So perhaps after that we will have some clarity on what should or should not be happening in schools.
LBC's political editor Natasha Clark reporting. Some of you might think, if you recall, we had a conversation early in the week about how white pupils are being failed in our schools and are dramatically behind other groups. Some might think that the Education Department would address that with more urgency than worrying about whether you can call someone MOOCs or however one pronounces MX. You might have views on that. You've got views on the Palestinian delegation to the United Nations saying send in more journalists to Gaza. John, you will be the next caller on that. Also coming up after the news, apparently everyone, every one of us will have a named, identifiable neighbourhood police officer serving every community. We'll speak with the relevant government minister to get more details on that and more facial recognition cameras as well. And in the world of finance,
Treasury officials are drawing up plans to raise more money from inheritance tax as the Chancellor looks to find extra cash in the autumn budget. I'm Kathleen Brooks from trading platform XTB, and I'll tell you more later in the show.
Yes, taxes really will be the death of us. It's 7:30. You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, on LBC. The news is with Thomas Watts.
Police are being encouraged to release criminal suspects' ethnicity and nationality where there is a public interest in doing so. Official guidance to forces has changed this morning following a series of controversial cases. Facial recognition technology is to be deployed by police forces across England. The Home Office says it will be used to catch high harm offenders, with new rules drawn up to ensure robust oversight. President Zelensky has vowed to reject any handover of land in eastern Ukraine ahead of a US-Russia summit. He's warned abandoning the Donbass region would open the door for Vladimir Putin to start a third war. LBC weather, cloudy to start, then another warm and sunny day. Some thunderstorms could develop later on. A high of 33 degrees.
This is LBC.
Calling all little explorers. The hunt for squishmallows is on. Who will your little one find in their Happy Meal? Would they chill out with Cam on the beach? Or rock on with Hallie? Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 25th of August, from 11 a.m, Squishmallows comprise toys only. Subject to availability. Fair ordering policy applies.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Make the O2 your playground this summer. Test your football skills at Toka Social. Take to the skies at iFly indoor skydiving. Or challenge your friends at Boom Battle Bar. Let the kids burn off energy at Oxygen Active Play. Perfect your game at Paddle Social Club. Or test your reflexes in the world of Activate. There's something for everyone at the O2. Feeling hungry? Choose from over 30 bars and restaurants and discover flavors from around the world. Search Do More at the O2 to start planning your perfect day.
Buying a home on a holiday park was a dream that became a nightmare. High-pressure sales tactics, huge site fee increases, and a loss of value have left many customers feeling misled, angry, and trapped. But the Holiday Park Advice Centre can help. Contact us today and we'll help claim back any money you're owed on your holiday home. Text ASSIST to 78900 to get started.
Hello, Holiday Park Advice Centre.
That's ASSIST to 78900.
Nick Ferrari at Breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
7:32, John, you will be the next caller. But around this time every morning, we dive into the world of finance, and we're assisted this morning by the front pages of two of the newspapers. Concerns about what might be happening to IHT or inheritance tax in the budget. Here with more details, Kathleen Brooks, financial analyst, research director of the trading platform XTB. What might be coming our way, Kathleen? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. Another tax grab, but as you mentioned, it's inheritance tax this time. Rachel Reeves is reportedly considering changing the cap to the value of gifts that you can parents essentially can give to their children or their other heirs tax-free in order to reduce their eventual tax bill. So right now you can give tax-free gifts unlimited amount up to 7 years before you die, and then after that there's kind of a tapered tax system before you get to that ultimate 40% rate. So scrapping it or changing the tapering rules or the percentage of tax that is applied to them is being considered. Now, I imagine that's going to be a bit of a political hot potato. I'd say it's likely to go down like a lead balloon, but I think we're going to get a lot of these articles actually as the Chancellor tries to plug this £50 billion black hole in the finances that essentially she can't really blame on anybody else this time around. And she's going to see how they land, and whether or not she rows back on them or puts them into place, we'll have to wait till the autumn budget, which won't come through till end of October, start of November.
So there's no suggestion what the changes might be, just that there could be changes. That's pretty much all we know at this time.
That's all we know, yeah. So it's definitely going to be very controversial, though, because especially because they seem very unwilling to cut public sector spending and instead are very much focused on tax rises. So I think she's just floating this idea to see how well it goes down. They'll check the polling numbers. If they come down badly, they'll put something else in place.
All right, well, that's the front page of a couple of papers. Let's go to the front page of the Financial Times, which has echoes of the conversation we're having about the death of journalists in the Middle East. And sadly, this is fueling industry elsewhere.
Yes, so it's Europe that is rearming and getting ready essentially for war. European arms manufacturers have expanded at three times the rate of peacetime, which suggests that they really are staying true to their commitments, that they are going to rearm, that they're not going to just rely on the US. So there has been like a really big push, both with both financially and with activity, to try and rearm, partly because of what's going on in the world, the geopolitical situation, partly because the US under Donald Trump has said that he's going to step back from things like the UN Security Council and make Europe pay for their own things. But this is a fantastic article, Nick. It's really well worth a read. It's amazing investigative journalism from the FT. They used a huge analysis on this. They actually used satellites to track changes at Europe's arms factories to see, you know, how many had, you know, expanded or grown. And they found that a third of them have showed signs of expansion. Obviously, any kind of defence company and defence expansion, it's all full of secrecy. So they've done this really, really well without giving up European defence secrets, but instead just tracking the expansion. And it is huge. So it suggests that it is it's taking place.
Why does Elon Musk want to take a bite out of Apple?
It's another day, another fight that Musk is taking on with his tech bros. So he's threatened to sue Apple. This is after the tech giant refused to put his AI chatbot called Grok on the top of its download chart. So he's saying that this is giving an unfair advantage to ChatGPT, which is owned by his rival, OpenAI. And he's saying that, this is unfair. You've got to recommend my app as well, because it's not growing fast enough for him, really. But Musk has got a lot of beef with OpenAI because he was one of the founders originally. So he's fallen out with them in the past because he wanted it to become a for-profit business, and OpenAI have been very firm with staying as a non-profit. So he sued them before. So it's a bit like litigious Musk strikes again.
And why, after 34 years, are we saying goodbye to... Oh, the fury, the anger, the Sturm und Angst that those sounds created, Kathleen.
Yeah, maybe because it sounds like that. But yes, it's AOL, so it's dial-up internet service. It's coming to an end after 30 years.
There'll be young people thinking, what are these two old folk talking about? What is
well,
that
exactly.
Sound?
There's only about 300,000 older, imagine, people in the US that actually have this anymore, because 300 million people in the US have broadband. I mean, in fairness, its UK arm was actually sold in 2006, so we kind of adopted broadband pretty quickly. And it was never really the main internet provider in the UK after 1999, but I definitely remember it, and I remember it falling out of service all the time. But it's a big fall from grace, because at one point in 2001, AOL was the biggest internet provider in the US, and in fairness, in Europe as well. It really did bring internet into our homes. So... for all those young folk that are listening, Nick, remember a time before that even happened.
We do, although you're considerably younger than I am. Kathleen, thank you. Kathleen Brooks, your financial analyst, research director at the trading platform XTB. 7:37 is the time. Khalid, I hope you can hold on the line, because I'm going to stay with business matters. I know you want to comment on the suggestion from the Palestinian delegation that more journalists should be from Gaza, and the line being taken by, I won't say the IDF, but a former member of the Israeli parliament, or the Knesset, telling us here on LBC that the 274 journalists who've been killed in Gaza since the latest outbreak, 269 of whom were Palestinian, all were in some way Hamas operatives. Were they all not? No, I wouldn't dream of saying that. I'm sure some were. Were they all definitely Hamas? How can they say that? And we'll return to your views on that. But as we're with business, let's talk about a big business where the taps could be turned off. Ministers are preparing to take Thames Water into temporary public ownership in a rescue that could pave the way for it to be sold off to a Chinese infrastructure company. One newspaper understands, The Times, one of the leading contenders is CKI, which has said it could take over Thames within weeks of it going into special administration. Let's turn to the unimpeachable Fergal Sharkey, who is, of course, a water campaigner. He ran that fantastic series for us at the back end of last year. He is an environmental campaigner, particularly specialising in water matters, and joins me now. Good to have you on again, Fergal. Just spell out to the listeners who've not been following this crisis as closely as you, why are they in such a parlous state? Morning, Fergal.
Well, in simple truth, the regulators turned a blind eye. Well, not turned a blind eye. They simply weren't being vigilant enough as to all of the financial engineering and all of the cash abstraction that was going on, particularly Thames Water. In fact, last year, they went to the High Court to raise another $3 billion, and a report written for the High Court specifically said Thames Water had become nothing more than a cash abstraction vehicle for the shareholders. As we stand here, Thames Water is now the better part of getting on for £22 billion in debt, and simply can't afford to pay it, can't afford to service that debt, and has for some time now been tinkering on the brink of bankruptcy and insolvency.
What is best to happen for the consumers? I think, is it the biggest water company in the country? Is it 1 in 16 of us or something get our water from it?
Indeed it is. It's 15 million customers in the Greater London and Thames Valley area. The truth is Thames Water should, probably at least a year ago, if not more, have been put into this process called special administration. As you can imagine, normally if a company goes bankrupt, a receiver is appointed and yep. they sell off the furniture and whatever assets, they raise some money. That cannot happen to water companies, as let's face it, we can't have a receiver trying to sell Oxford Sewage Works to the highest bidder.
Yep.
So it has to go into this special process, a kind of temporary nationalisation. What government should do is actually trigger that process today. They should have triggered it 12 months ago. They're dithering the impact on customers. That $3 billion loan they arranged at the end of last year is costing Thames Water's customers £800 million in fees, disbursements, 9.75% interest. Even the Court of Appeal judges were rolling their eyes at that idea. Government needs to stop dithering. It needs to be decisive. It needs to put Thames Water into special administration. And then I think we need to look at keeping it back in state hands and effectively nationalising it permanently, if not breaking the company up into two component parts. Water supply business, the sewage supply business, it's too big, too cumbersome, and it needs to be overhauled. Government needs to do its job and do it this morning.
Before I let you go, buddy, I have to say that along with another of my heroes, Alan Shearer, you have a birthday today. I think Mr. Shearer is a little bit younger than you, Fergal, but I hope you have a lovely day. What have you got planned for your 79th birth? That can't be right. I'm so sorry. For your 67th birthday. What have you got planned, buddy?
Thankfully, I don't feel 79 or indeed 67 for that matter, but that may be just me delusional. I've already had a phenomenal morning. The
lovely.
Family's been here with cards and gifts.
Brilliant.
And we will be heading into town later to a well-known watering hole of you and I have acquainted.
I know where you're going. They better get more champagne in after the last time you and I went, then you very kindly paid. Fergal, happy birthday to you. Good to have you on. Love to your family. Fergal Sharkey, environmentalist, particular water campaigner. Happy birthday to you, 7:42. Thank you for hanging on the line. Important matters now, grave matters, I think we can say. The suggestion of the Palestinian delegation, more journalists go in to Gaza. Khaled and Leicester, your view on that? Good morning.
Yeah, I think this is preposterous. You know, Israel have been lying through their teeth from day one, continuously. They've lied. They've never. They're always saying they killed somebody. That's always investigating. They killed
I'm sure some of those 274 do have links to Hamas, Khaled. Let's be honest.
Now, let's be honest, Nick. You cannot say that. The previous caller was talking about indoctrination.
No.
You cannot put that.
I'm allowed to say that I can believe of 274 people operating in that field. Some of them will have links. I'm allowed to say that, and that's what. But I'm also allowed to say I don't believe that all 274. I don't believe that for a moment.
But Nick, look at the, you cannot indoctrinate. We were talking about you're planting a seed of doubt in the minds of the public, stating.
Well, you're going to tell me that all 274 are innocent, then?
You show me the evidence. You show me the evidence of one single one who had a grenade or something.
That's as absurd as the position taken by the former Israeli MP who said that they are all with Hamas. You can't possibly say that they're not all with Hamas. Not by the way that this necessarily means that if you want to go for the journalist, you can blow up the camera operator as well. I'm not supporting that for a moment.
But show me the evidence, Nick. You haven't got any evidence to back up that claim.
Well, there are... Certainly this journalist, the most high profile in the recent killings, was at one point on the Hamas payroll. Now, the last documentation is for 2023. People are allowed to change, but yes, he was on effectively the books of Hamas as recently as 2023.
So Shireen Abu Akleh, when they killed her, they were stating... Remember Shireen Abu Akleh, the Palestinian Christian journalist from America, originally?
But we're not talking about that case, are you? You asked me about this case, and that's what I did.
My point is, they continuous, whenever they kill anybody and there's uproar by the public, then it's, oh yeah, we're investigating. They never get investigations go through. No, nothing comes out of the ridiculous investigation. Besides, they've been kind of committing this genocide. They've been brutalizing this occupation for decades, Nick.
Well, let's not forget what the latest flare-up tracks back to, which was, of course, the actions by Hamas to come in and kill, rape and take hostage a number of Israelis, more than 1,000, more than 1,200 in total, I think. Khalid, thank you for your views. Listen, if you're sending WhatsApp and you're saying, why aren't you reading them? I just tell you, there's some kind of issue here where we don't seem to be getting emails and we don't seem to be getting WhatsApps, and I do apologise. Someone is running around with a screwdriver. But we are getting text, so let's just feature a couple of those. Patrick in Docklands, I can't be the only one who regards the comments of the IDF with the same level of a belief I have for Putin's announcements. Ali says, ignoring whether the documents Israel have provided are conclusive proof, the journalist is one of the most prominent reporters in Gaza, so the decision to bomb him when surrounded by four or five other journalists must be a deliberate strategy. Do keep your messages coming. I'm unfortunately only via text at the moment. I'll let you know if that changes. Changes here in the UK as regards policing. Home Secretary Yvette Cooper speaking about the rollout of new facial recognition vans.
What we're doing is introducing a new legal framework so that it's used in a targeted way to make sure we can arrest wanted criminals, but also people can know that there's proper protection.
And we'll hear from the relevant minister after the 7:45 LBC news headlines read by Thomas Watts.
Police forces have been told to share suspects' ethnicity and nationality with the public in more cases. Facial recognition vans are to be rolled out in 7 more force areas across England. The Ukrainian president, Volodymyr Zelensky, has vowed to reject any plan to hand the Donbass region to Russia. LBC weather, cloudy to start, then warm and sunny again, a high of 33 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the Essex stretch of the M25 clockwise to junction 29 at the A127. It was after a car broke down earlier. Has now been recovered, but it's still very slow. Also, the A12 remains closed northbound between junctions 18 at Danbury and 19 at the Boreham Interchange, and that was after a car was on fire earlier. Problems at Staples Corner, the North Circular Road's westbound exit slip road stays closed to the Staples Corner roundabout after that car overturned, and there are lengthy delays on the M1 southbound as well as a result. In Ealing, the Uxbridge Road is closed in both directions, and that's all down to an accident, so that's causing delays. And on the underground, there are minor delays on the District Line.
This is LBC.
At TfO, we're opening up more of London for everyone with step-free access. We're continuing to improve accessibility at many of our stations, and now over 200 stations and counting have step-free access, including the entire Elizabeth Line, DLR and all tram stops. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
Body pain might not sound like this.
Oh.
Or this.
Oh.
But it might sound like this.
I'm fine.
Hiding your body pain behind a smile? Let us help. With up to 12 hours of uninterrupted muscle and joint pain relief. Voltarol, the joy of movement. Voltarol Joint and Back Pain Relief 2.3% gel contains diclofenac diethylammonium. Always read the label.
So, what are you watching at the moment?
Squid Game, Dad.
Let's watch it together this weekend. That'd be nice. What's it on again?
Netflix. You've got EETV, so you just switch it on.
What season are we up to?
4. That's Stranger Things, Mum.
And what about the kids? Don't worry, they'll watch Cocomelon for the 100th time.
Switch on Netflix with EETV. Plus, change up sports and entertainment. It's TV with the ultimate flex for the whole family.
EETV requires EE broadband. Separate 24-month contracts for TV and broadband. Content may vary. Terms apply.
Julie could part exchange her car. Or check out We Buy Any Car. She could be unsure if she got a good deal part exchanging. or have cash in the bank with more bargaining power to get a bigger car for her five-a-side team. Totally played. Or total player. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Pump six in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
OK.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Have I won a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6. T's and C's apply. Subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Coming to more calls on that in just a moment. We're talking about the number of journalists who've been killed, specifically, of course, after the Palestinian delegation to the United Nations say more journalists should go in. War journalists are an extraordinary breed of men and women. I only really came across them once when I found myself in the Caribbean, and there was an American invasion of Grenada. Do you remember that? So we must be talking early 1980s. And I was the show business correspondent for the Sun newspaper. And I got a phone call from the news. I was in Barbados. Get yourself to Grenada. Why? There could be a war. I've never covered a war. I've done Northern Ireland. So I arrived. You can imagine. I arrived there in my Gucci loafers and linen jacket. And there are all these seasoned war reporters. They are treating me with utter disdain. Quite correctly, by the way. Utter disdain. Me telling, what are you doing? I've just interviewed Ivy Tilsey from Coronation Street. On Barbados, and they decided to send me to war. Fortunately, it all fizzled out, but they're an incredibly brave collection of men and women. But would people more want more of them to go in? Colin says, the burden of proof has to be with the accuser, that is Israel. They must be innocent until proven guilty. This comes in from David. Some of the journalists working for Hamas as journalists, if they were simply documenting Hamas atrocities and not participating, surely that means they are being journalists, not terrorists. Look, let's be honest about it. Nobody knows. They're absolute certainty. The 274 sad individuals, poor souls, who've lost their lives. But is it possible that Hamas would try and send people out posing as journalists? You betcha. You bet your life they would do that. Do you think all 274 are? Never. Never in a million. Ty in Clapham, you're on the radio on this. What can you tell me, Ty? Good morning.
Good morning to you, Mr. Ferrari. Just a correction. You need to just to remind you that Hamas is a political party. They stood for an election with Mahmoud Abbas' party and they won. So in the West, we refer to them as terrorists.
Mm-hmm. It's so a terror organization.
There will be some member of those journalists who are member of Hamas. That doesn't make them terrorists. No. We in the West is the one that call them terrorists. Remember the mantra. The state of Israel have the right to defend himself against the children in incubator, the 2 or 4 years old, or the elderly ones.
Sorry, I didn't catch
that mantra.
Sorry, sir. Something about the incubator. No, Ty, please. I'm not sure what you said, and I've got to check you've not said something. What are you saying about an incubator? I can't make out.
No, I said to you, do you remember the mantra? The state of Israel have the right to defend itself.
The man trap.
No, this is a mantra.
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 Right. Yeah. Sorry.
So
yeah, it does. Yes,
you,
Israel. Yes, yes.
I said, are they defending this? Because that word now disappear from a narrative now for the past 3 months.
Right.
I say, are they defending themselves against the children, the child in the incubator, the 2, 4 years old, or the mother they were killing, or their grandfathers? So that word disappear.
Right.
We don't use the narrative anymore. The journalists don't use the narrative anymore. And you don't say whenever there's a news from Gaza, the journalists always say the rebel from the health. Nobody says that.
Sorry,
anymore.
The journalists say the rebel from what? Sorry.
No, whenever something happens,
yeah.
When you're announcing it on the radio, people, not only you, the journalists will say, according to the terrorist organization Hamas.
Yeah.
Yes. I said, they don't say that anymore. It just simply disappeared from the narrative.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay. Thank you for your input on that. I think certainly I try and make it plain that Hamas is a terror organisation, and when the figures come out, and I'm not for a moment suggesting, of course, that there will not be thousands, tragically thousands of people, the killing continues. But remember, of course, what would be marvellous would be that there would be peace on all sides with the return of the hostages. So we do have to take all of that into contention. Now, we've got a bit of an issue trying to get hold of the government minister, who's going to be telling us more about facial recognition cameras. But we've got calls on it already. So let's go to that. Andy in Hackney, it may be that I have to say farewell and bring you back or something. Andy, what do you are you looking forward to the use of more of these cameras? Good morning.
I don't look forward to them, Nick, no, at all. I think they're a terrible idea. In that, essentially, nobody trusts the police here anyway.
Why do you say that?
Because trust it doesn't exist here. Decades, Stoke Newington Police Station has been an absolute catastrophe.
In what way?
I've been there as a victim of crime a couple of times in the last 15 years and was treated terribly. I know people I'm a white person. I know people that are black people, my ex-girlfriend, for example, mm-hmm. who's been treated awfully there. Various other sort of people of her sort of like background.
Think changes can be made?
I think it would take a root and branch, restructuring of the whole service.
Well, listen to what you're about to hear. We might try and come back to you because, Andy, thank you for what you say. I understand your pessimism, but let's try and get more upbeat and hear what they are planning or what they hope to bring about. Bring into the conversation Labour MP and Policing Minister Dame Diana Johnson. Good to have you on, Dame Diana. There's two aspects then, the extension of these live cameras and also everyone having a neighbourhood police officer. What more detail can you give us? Good morning, Minister.
Good morning. Well, I'm very pleased that we're going to have 3,000 additional police officers and PCSOs by the end of this financial year in our communities. And they've also committed police forces to responding within 72 hours to any inquiries that are made by local people to those neighbourhood teams. So that's number one. Number two is we want to give the police the tools they need to keep us safe. And live facial recognition is a tool which I'm a big fan of. And we're going to roll out 10 vans around 7 police forces to actually extend the use of live facial recognition. We're doing this because we know in London, where it's been used effectively over the course of the last year, 580 arrests for rape, people suspected of rape or GBH or robbery, serious offending, domestic abuse as well, and also sex offenders who are out in the community, who are breaching their conditions of being out in the community. So it's a really powerful tool for policing, and I want to see it used more in other forces.
In 12 months, the Met, how many arrests did they make using live facial recognition? Do you know?
I think it was about 580.
Fantastic. So which of the forces then are going to get the new cameras?
So we've got Greater Manchester, we've got West Midlands, we've got Surrey, we've got Sussex, we've got Hampshire, we've got Bedfordshire. Is that 7?
Surely you're the minister, you have the list too.
Got the list.
You said the West Midlands. Do you mean West Yorkshire?
Sorry, West Yorkshire and Greater Manchester.
Surrey and Sussex are sharing. Bedfordshire,
Hampshire and Thames Valley.
Okay. And they'll be operative from when?
Now. They're available now. We want them to start using them as soon as possible.
Neighbourhood policing. So everyone will have, an email or a phone number for a police officer? How will that work, Dame Diana?
Yeah, so if you go on your local force's website, as I did last night, I was having a look at Humberside, and it will have the neighbourhood team. It pulls up
all
the names.
So would you put your postcode in?
Right, okay. It says where you live, and it just pulls up all the named officers for your patch. And then if you want to contact them, there's a way of contacting them. You can obviously do this by telephone as well if you're not able to go online, but you can put your whatever your concern is about your neighbourhood, and all forces have agreed they will be responding within 72 hours.
That I mean, it's obviously it's good news, but that's 3 days. That's quite a long time, isn't it?
Can I just be clear? This is not for emergency. So you've got an emergency, you ring 999. For non-emergency, you can ring 111. This is if you've got an issue that you're concerned about, say, you're just worried that there's antisocial behaviour developing in the local park, you'd like the police to have a look at what they can do, you'd put that into the police and they would respond to you within 72 hours.
You and I, on other policing matters, you and I have talked about the need for ethnicity of suspects to be released. We have a move forward in this, I understand, Dame Diana. Can you briefly address that?
Yes, so the College of Policing have produced some interim guidance for police forces, which is saying that nationality and ethnicity or ethnicity should be released when a person is charged. We normally see names and addresses given at that stage. We're very keen to be as open and as transparent as possible. We welcome what the College of Policing are saying. The key thing in all of this is we want to make sure that victims of crimes get justice through the courts, and we don't want to do anything that could prejudice a trial. So that's why we've asked the Law Commission to look at what more information could be disclosed, and we've asked them to hurry up with that piece of work. But the College of Policing have put forward this interim guidance to police forces so they are clearer about what they can do. It obviously has to be done in conjunction with the CPS, but we're really keen to be as transparent and as open as we can be.
Minister, do you support an idea put forward by one police and crime commissioner, this gentleman's in Thames Valley, that shopkeepers and members of the public are part of the problem with shop theft or shoplifting because they don't try and stop thieves? They should have a go. Do you support that?
What I support is the 13,000 additional neighbourhood police officers that I want to see back in our communities to provide that presence to stop the shop theft and shoplifting going on as it is at the moment. I also think...
But if one of them isn't in Sainsbury's as someone makes off with a rump steak, what should a member of the public do?
Well, I was in Marks and Spencer's in Hull and a man came in front of me, grabbed the largest bunch of flowers off the flower display in Marks and Spencer's at the front of the store and marched out with it. I was gobsmacked, to be honest. I went straight away to the assistant to say, that man's just nicked those flowers. So I did what was right. I reported it, because you never know with individuals.
Why didn't you shout, "Oi, put those flowers back, I'm an MP"?
I was so gobsmacked. He had the brazenness to do that, to be honest. You know, you're just walking
into
a store.
You're never normally one not to come forward. You're pretty good at coming forward. But you didn't feel you wanted to get involved with the man, obviously.
Well, I wanted to report it to the store. I wanted to make sure that it was reported, because that's another issue, that stores need to report this so the police know where the problems are.
And what did the shop worker say to you, Dame Diana? Did he or she go chasing after them, or what did they do?
She was reporting it to her manager. They had obviously a process they had to go through. But can I just say, there is an issue about designing stores so items that are easily nickable are not at the front of the store. That seems to me a responsibility of shops to make sure they're designing out that kind of behaviour.
Well, what would you put at the front of the store then? Because anything's nickable. I mean, we can lift anything.
Not everything's nickable. Not everything's of the value that people will want to nick. Because you will know that people nick things that they can sell.
So you'd put tins of tomatoes or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, if you're putting rump steak at the front of the store, or bottles of alcohol, that's probably not a good idea.
Let's finish lastly on the migrant issue. Can I thank you and your teams? Because you and I had a conversation about making some videos online to show people that you are, and either you or your colleagues have done that, and many of my viewers have responded positively. So I'm grateful that you listened and acted on that, or your colleagues did or whatever. But sadly, the one in, one out deal doesn't seem to be working. Since that was announced last month, numbers have gone up 50%. This is an abject failure, isn't it, Dame Diana? Much as I like you personally, an utter failure.
Well, can I just say, first of all, I think that's a little unfair. The pilot that the Home Secretary announced a few days ago, a week or so ago, is in its early days. It's a pilot. I know people have been detained, and I hope in the next few weeks we'll see them being removed to France.
Yes.
But it's only one measure. We've got a whole range of other measures we're bringing in.
But since his announcement, it's gone up 50%, the numbers of people who've arrived, since one in, one out was announced in July 10. The Daily Telegraph have done the number. It's actually gone up.
Well, I absolutely accept that because of, and I know you'll probably pick me up on this, but because of the weather conditions.
Oh, game
done. But, you know, that is a factor. But can I just say to you, there is a range of... Well, I'm just explaining why they're coming in the boats at the moment. But can I also say that the arrangements we've got with the French are really important, and particularly getting the French authorities to change the law so they will intervene when the boats are in shallow water, because I know the French have for years said they cannot get involved if someone's in a boat in shallow water. They're looking at that and changing the law. That's going to be a really important thing. The work that's going on with Border Command, the investment in £100 million there, more national crime agency workers, smashing the gangs, right, going after the gangs. That's the key part of this. Right. And of course, we've been in power a year. The Tories had 6 years that the smugglers have been able to build up their networks and get quite good at this. Right. We've got to actually tackle that now.
Minister, I'm going to ask all my listeners now to check that they've got a neighbourhood police officer by putting in their postcode. You're confident they will all, up and down the land, as people reach for their... how confident are you?
I'm confident. Yeah, I'm confident.
All right, safe shopping next time you're in any of those stores. Thank you for your time. Dame Diana Johnson, Policing Minister, talking about those facial recognition cameras. And would you just check? I will do. I promise I'll check mine. Get onto the website they talked about. Put in your postcode, your local police website. Put in your postcode and get the name of your officer. Let's see if it's working. 4 minutes after 8, LBC News headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, police forces are to be encouraged to disclose the ethnicity and nationality of some people who are charged. The update to the guidelines follows a series of controversial cases in which authorities were accused of a cover-up. It's hoped the change will combat misinformation spread on social media. Policing Minister Dame Diana Johnson has told Nick the system should be as open and transparent as possible.
We welcome what the College of Policing are saying. The key thing in all of this is we want to make sure that victims of crimes get justice through the courts. And we don't want to do anything that could prejudice a trial. So that's why we've asked the Law Commission to look at what more information could be disclosed. And we've asked them to hurry up with that piece of work.
Controversial facial recognition vans are to be rolled out across 7 more police force areas in England. The Home Office says they will be used to identify serious offenders following successful trials in London and South Wales. Big Brother Watch says it's an alarming expansion of the surveillance state. President Zelensky has warned Russia could start a third war if it's handed territory in eastern Ukraine. He's vowed to reject any peace deal that would cede the Donbass region ahead of Donald Trump's summit with Vladimir Putin on Friday. LBC's Washington correspondent Simon Marks has more.
The Ukrainians and their European allies fear that Vladimir Putin will use the meeting to woo President Trump with promises of economic ties between the US and Russia and to secure his backing for the dismemberment of Ukraine. But White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt says the summit is a genuine effort to advance the cause of peace.
The goal of this meeting for the president is to walk away with a better understanding of how we can end this war.
Kremlin aides have indicated that the Russian leader will be asking for Crimea and the whole of eastern Ukraine to be handed over to him.
Sir Keir Starmer, along with other European leaders, will hold remote talks with Donald Trump and Volodymyr Zelensky later. A group of MPs says under-22s in England should be given the same free bus travel as their Scottish counterparts. The Transport Select Committee says it would improve access to work and skills opportunities. And League Two side Bromley pulled off a huge upset in the first round of the EFL Cup last night. They knocked out championship title favourites Ipswich on penalties after a 1-1 draw. In the city, the FTSE 100's reopening at 91.47 after closing up 18 yesterday. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 15. LBC weather, a cloudy start, then another warm and sunny day with a few thunderstorms possible later. A high of 33 Celsius. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
I'm an accountant, so even when I stop working, my brain doesn't. You know, I'll be halfway through dinner thinking about VAT returns. Then I started using Sage Copilot's VAT Assistant. It flags errors before I hit submit, so that's one less thing to worry about.
Sage Copilot is built with over 40 years of HMRC expertise, supporting accountants like Josh from Yeomans Harrison and Associates Limited. That's more than artificial intelligence, that's authentic intelligence. Search Sage Copilot to learn more. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call and WhatsApp message now 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
8 minutes after eight, let's get straight into our next conversation. It's a little bit delayed because we were late getting to the policing minister, and much of what she discussed, actually, we will continue. We'll look about these, what they're called, LFRs. What the hell's in that? Live facial recognition. Hugely successful in a pilot with the Met. 10 more vans or units being rolled out. And we've been checking. I don't know about you, but the minister said it would work, and it is. I found out who my local officers are. It seems to be working very well in the Met. We also checked Thames Valley. I'm probably checking a few others, so we'll... If you're not getting those officers, do let us know. But it is criminality of a different sort with which we start this hour. And you may recall when we looked at the morning newspapers, I said, what was the photograph that is on the front page of the majority of titles today, newspaper titles? And it is of migrants flocking from France, I think possibly Gravelines, if it's pronounced like that, or certainly in the Calais area. This photograph, I'm quickly counting, 5, 10, 15, 20, but there must be 78, maybe 80-plus people. All of them happen to be male. The ones at the front are certainly young and would appear rather fit males, and that's why they're leading the charge through the water. Presumably the photographer is obviously ahead of them. If you can imagine, it's like a 100-yard sprint, 100-metre race or something. Obviously, they are presumably heading to a dinghy out there. Almost 500 made the crossing on Monday. This, as the number is up, it's 50,000. We've never got to that number so quickly. And, of course, even since the one-in, one-out deal that was trumpeted last month, research by one paper, The Telegraph, shows the number has actually gone up. And it's had enormous impact on one particular seaside town where an investigation has taken place. It was once called the Mecca of the South Coast. It was famed for attracting party students, stag do's, hen parties, or even families relaxing seaside staycation if they did like to be beside the seaside. But the city has now been termed the new Wild West, with locals avoiding parts of the resort at night for fear of becoming victims of crime. I'm taking you to Bournemouth. In one street alone, two of the town's historic hotels have been turned into asylum seeker hotels. Dozens of criminal charges brought against those staying there. At the Britannia and Roundhouse Hotel, which are just 180 yards from each other, there are 91 criminal charges against migrants staying there. You go to the nearby Chine Hotel, another 25 charges against migrants there. A total of 116 charges have been brought against 51 asylum seekers living across the three hotels near the seafront. Is that the reality of these people being put in this sort of accommodation? Well, here's what some of the folk in Bournemouth told LBC's Joe Draper yesterday.
What I don't like is all the tents on the beach. I certainly wouldn't be down there after dark, but going for a late night swim, absolutely off the card.
When we came through, there was a lot of homeless last year, wasn't there? And a lot of people drinking. So as a woman, I wouldn't want to go through on my own.
To me, it's a bit of a national dilemma. Trying to turn it into some kind of, like, racial thing or migrant thing, to me, is absolutely wrong. Because, you know, generally speaking, people live here well, fine. You know, they get on fine. Yes, we've got these migrant hotels, but I don't see any problem from these guys.
Oh, people fighting, vomiting on the streets. I used to feel safe, but now, not anymore. Especially here in Central. A lot of parties, a lot of drunk people.
You think the police are doing enough? Do you think there's enough resources to stop crime?
I think they should do more, to be honest, because you barely see them here.
Well, Bournemouth is an area known well to our next guest. Martin Underhill served as the independent Dorset Police and Crime Commissioner until 2021 and joins me now. Well, they're talking about a city I imagine you know well, or a town you know well, possibly even love. Your reaction to what you're hearing? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Well, horrified, to be frank. I think most people are across the whole country, but particularly in Dorset at the moment. My first point is that this is a direct attack on local democracy. Local politicians and local authorities have no say when the Home Office take over a hotel, or in this case, three hotels for housing asylum seekers. And we witnessed a similar scenario with this in Weymouth when the Bibby Stockholm barge was imposed on the people of Weymouth without any input from local residents or politicians. So I really worry about this because... With politicians and policing and the public not having a say, it creates a tinderbox for public disorder because people are angry that this has been imposed on them. And there seems to be no logic as to where these people are being put.
Where do you think they should go, Mr. Underhill?
I think common sense needs to prevail. If you're taking over a hotel in the middle of a town centre, particularly a town centre like Bournemouth, which has a financial decline and emptying high street, which in turn reduces tourism and increases homelessness, put families in the hotels and the young single males, who are the ones that are causing the huge public outcry, should be put in tents in remote locations. That's what other countries in Europe are doing. Why are we putting them in hotels?
This, you were served, as I say, as Crime Commissioner as recently as 2021. An issue like this doesn't happen overnight. What were the tensions you were aware of when you were still in post?
The tensions when I was in post, and I had a lot of TV coverage over my views of the boats, was that the government didn't do enough to stop them. To be fair, in my tenure, they brought in three border force cutters and the Navy got involved. And there's now various responses that weren't there in 2015-16, when I was very vocal on behalf of the people of Dorset, because we were having people coming in on boats in our county as well as Kent and Sussex. So things have got better from a government response point of view. But of course, we were at one stage talking about using RAF bases, then we were talking about using large campuses, industrial estates that have gone into decline. You can't put young men who, by virtue of the fact they've travelled across Europe, are hardened criminals, they have to become criminals to survive, in the centre of a town like Bournemouth. It's just causing real public outcry. And we know what's going to happen next, and it's already happened. We're going to see public disorder. We've already had demonstrations in Bournemouth against this. The public, and this isn't all right-wing, Nick, the public care about this. The public are outraged by this, and they are the people going on the marches. It's just not right.
Martin, thanks for your time. Martin Underhill served as the Independent Dorset Police and Crime Commissioner from 2012 to 2021. Sonia will be the first caller on this. Oh, I do like to be beside the seaside, but not if you happen to be in Bournemouth. Sonia will be the first caller, as I say. Also coming up after the news, we'll look at more detail at the idea of this change by the police to issue guidance to disclose ethnicity details of certain suspects or those charged. 8.15 now, LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
The policing ministers told Nick that forces should be as open and transparent as possible about suspects' backgrounds. Controversial facial recognition vans are to be rolled out across seven more force areas in England. And President Zelensky has warned Russia could start a third war if it's handed the Donbass in eastern Ukraine. LBC weather, cloudy to start, then another warm and sunny day, a high of 33 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The A12 remains closed at northbound between junctions 18 at Danbury and 19 at the Boreham interchange. It's because a car was on fire earlier. Also, the North Circular Road's westbound exit slip road to Staples Corner remains closed because a car has overturned. It also means there are lengthy delays on the M1 southbound as well to the Staples Corner roundabout. In West Ealing, the Uxbridge Road stays closed both ways. That's all down to an accident. Long delays on the A40 again this morning eastbound to Gypsy Corner, and that's because of the ongoing works where only one lane is open. On the underground, there are severe delays on the Victoria line and minor delays on the District line.
This is LBC.
Save with EETV and get the ultimate flex.
Is anyone up for Squid Game on Netflix?
What about The Rookie on Now?
Wait, I need to catch up.
No spoilers here. With EETV, you can switch up your subscription so you never miss unmissable shows.
So I can watch whatever I want.
That's right. Switch on Netflix now and Discovery Plus to suit you. All on our ultra-reliable broadband. That's why TV lovers are choosing EE. Search EETV deals today.
New customers, 56% UK availability. Terms apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
You sound happy.
I've just spotted tuna in the fridge, and it's got my name all over it.
Well, be careful. It's a long way up.
Relax. We're insured, aren't we?
Nope. That's not what I've heard.
Because you never know what little pickles will get themselves into. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Seriously, we're not insured.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Many dentists refer their own patients on to Darwood and Tanner.
My name is Dr. Mark Kent. I'm a general dental practitioner practicing in a North London suburb. Darwood and Tanner have become my preferred referral practice. I feel that Dr. Andrew Darwood can provide the highest level of implant surgery that is available, together with giving my patients the option of alternative specialist treatments.
Download your information pack today. Search Darwood and Tanner. Your smile is our healthy obsession.
Body pain might not sound like this.
Oh.
Or this.
Oh.
But it might sound like this.
I'm fine.
Hiding your body pain behind a smile? Let us help. With up to 12 hours of uninterrupted muscle and joint pain relief. Voltarol, the joy of movement. Voltarol Joint and Back Pain Relief 2.3% gel contains diclofenac diethylammonium. Always read the label.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Coming to you as the first caller, Sonia, in just a moment. 18 minutes after 8. Now, I've mentioned a couple of newspapers. I should tell you about The Sun. Their front page is a story of an illegal migrant who goes under the name as Alexandra 420 or Alexandra 420, racking up a million views as he details his journey and then hosted a live stream Q&A from his hotel near Heathrow. Now, Alexandra 420 set out at 4 a.m. from Calais on Saturday, and by yesterday he's in his £120 a night room in the Heathrow Crown Plaza. They've been housing migrants for more than 4 years. It comes complete with a swimming pool, steam room, sauna, gym, Irish bar, whatever that is, two large restaurants and a theatre. The Sun reporters watched as more migrants were delivered to the hotel yesterday on packed buses along with food supplies. In his video, he talked about how you really won't have any problems. Ha! Tell all your friends to come over to the UK. My wish was to come to this hotel, and he shows people who were a million people who tuned in his room. He has two single beds, a double and an ensuite bathroom. Welcome to London, its best place. When the newspaper The Sun contacted TikTok when he started a second live stream chat, the TikTok did finally take it down. That is the reality, isn't it? And they wonder why, the government wonders why this is causing such dissent. How many of you would love to have a £120 a night hotel room with ensuite bathroom, two single beds and a double, access to a sauna, gym, two large restaurants and a theatre? Well, one Afghan man told the newspaper, I only came to Britain a few days ago on a boat from France. This hotel is nice. We get fed and we've been given clothes. Life is nice. Hey, what's happening in Bournemouth, Sonia? Good morning.
Oh, hi, Nick. I'm just calling to say Bournemouth is a lovely town, but on a hot, sunny day, you know, we get train loads of full of youngsters coming, all getting pickled and, you know, sozzled in the sunshine, and that's never really going to end up well, is it?
Has that always been the case?
I'd say, like, in recent years it has got worse, to be honest. My point is why aren't the police doing more to sort of man the beaches then, if that's the case?
When you say man the beaches, what would you want to see the police do?
Well, just police presence would be a good start. There isn't any unless the police get called. I mean, there was an incident with my daughter a few years ago. I think she was 17 and she was with two friends down on Bournemouth Beach. She went to the toilet, or she was going to the toilet, and a guy approached her, was grabbing her and saying, come to the toilet with me. She said, no, I've got a boyfriend, get off me. And he wouldn't listen to her. He was grabbing her arm. She pulled her arm off him. He then proceeded to stump a cigarette out in her back.
Ah.
Yeah. And she was really upset, crying her eyes out, telling me what this man had done. So I phoned the police. Six police officers turned up on Bournemouth Beach with dogs and everything, told me to get my daughter to leave the beach, which I did, because that's what I was told. But before I left the beach, I double-checked them. They knew who he was, the description of him. So he said, yeah, he's by the lifeguard, sitting next to the lifeguard, says he's got long hair, this colour shorts, this colour top. We've been watching him on CCTV. So I left the beach with her, phoned up later on that day to find out what had happened, and they said they didn't arrest him. And I was like, what? And they said, no, we didn't arrest him because your daughter had had a drink. She'd had two of those little cocktail tins. She wasn't drunk, but anyway, is that okay then if you've had a drink that someone can take you off to the toilets and do what they want with you, drag you off to the toilets?
And for the purpose of clarification, this was a local person or he was an asylum seeker, or we don't know?
He was a foreign man. Right. I don't know exactly where he was from.
Right,
but
okay.
He was with a big group of people down on Bournemouth Beach, and I just think the police didn't want to go over. He didn't want to go over and arrest him.
How anxious does this make people who live close and in and around your place, of part of Bournemouth?
Yeah, people don't want to go to Bournemouth. Local people don't go anywhere near Bournemouth Beach now. There is 7 miles of beach in Bournemouth, and it is beautiful, but going anywhere near Bournemouth, because, as I said, train loads of people just arriving from Southampton, London, gangs of people, all getting pickled, and it just doesn't end well at the end of the day.
Doesn't, does it? Is your daughter okay now?
Yeah, she's fine. She is scarred, to be honest with you, but I have lost faith in this police after that, to be honest with you. I've got no trust in them, because I wouldn't have left the police that. I wouldn't have left the beach that day. I would have confronted him myself and embarrassed him. He was with a big group of friends. And wow. Even her boyfriend turned up that day, and he wasn't happy either.
Of course he wasn't.
And he wanted to go over and confront him, but I'd already called the police.
Yes, I mean, I understand how you feel, because you're a parent, and nothing brings about a rage like someone going after your children. But be very, very cautious, because no one is helped if you're then the victim of a crime as well. But I'm very sorry that the Dorset Police wouldn't appear to have operated in the fashion that would have been desirable in that case. Sonia, look after your daughter. Thank you for that. We've got more calls coming in from Bournemouth, and we'll go to those in a moment. But let's talk more broadly about policing, and the idea now that there will be new national guidance for disclosing suspects' details such as ethnicity. Now, this is something I spoke about with the Chief Constable of West Midlands, Craig Guildford, when he was in the studio last week taking your calls. He told me that as much as police forces wanted to be as transparent as possible, they did have to abide by the rules and regs.
We're always striving to be transparent in everything that we do, but we're governed by rules. Rules are often set by Parliament, they're set by the CPS, the courts. We have to be really careful that we do follow the rules and we don't just make rules up as we go along. So that particular debate at the moment, and I spoke to my colleague next door in Warwickshire, he's followed the rules, he's done the right thing. At the moment, the rules are under review. And they're under review by the CPS, the National Police Chiefs Council, and also there's a Law Commission review ongoing. And I think what we need to do is wait and see what comes out of there and then act accordingly and act properly. But in terms of the broader theme of transparency, absolutely. We produce loads of data, and of course we want to give as much information as possible, but we have to operate within the bounds of the rules and the law.
And speaking with the previous hour of the show, Policing Minister Dame Diana Johnson, I just want to press pause there. Thank you to Nancy and to Rob and others. Unfortunately, the Policing Minister did say for policing matters, call 111 if you don't get immediate response. Of course, she meant 101 or 10. 111 is the NHS helpline, and I'm sure she'd be at pains to stress that she doesn't want you ringing the NHS if you have policing issues. The number she should have quoted, she's only the policing minister, is 101, so thank you for making us aware of that. But here she is talking about what this new guidance will mean.
Yes, so the College of Policing have produced some interim guidance for police forces, which is saying that nationality and ethnicity should be released when a person is charged. We normally see names and addresses given at that stage. We're very keen to be as open and as transparent as possible. We welcome what the College of Policing are saying. The key thing in all of this is we want to make sure that victims of crimes get justice through the courts, and we don't want to do anything that could prejudice a trial. So that's why we've asked the Law Commission to look at what more information could be disclosed, and we've asked them to hurry up with that piece of work. But the College of Policing have put forward this interim guidance to police forces so they are clearer about what they can do.
Let's turn to Sir Andy Marsh, who's Chief Executive of the College of Policing. He served as Chief Constable of two forces, and he joins me now. Sir Andy, I'm hearing that this is interim guidance, and interim for how long, and what happens as a definitive result or response? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Thanks for having me on. So this guidance applies from this morning, and we've thought it through, discussed it with partners in the courts, in the CPS, and I've spoken to every Chief Constable about it last week, and this will bring greater consistency to the transparency that we need, actually, when the public are very concerned about what's happening in their communities.
But if it's interim, how long is it interim for?
So there's a couple of important things happening. The college oversees guidance to police forces called authorised professional practice. There is one for media and communications. That authorised professional practice is under review, and we intend to go to public consultation of it later in the autumn. The other, and that's going to address a very significant range of issues on media and communications, and hopefully bring us up to date with the digital world and make some other important changes. The other significant change, and you heard about it from the policing minister, is that the Law Commission are reviewing a number of issues on not conflicting a fair trial, but how to balance that. I wrote, actually, with senior police leaders to the Law Commission last December, saying that a number of significant and highly developed criminal justice systems, and think about the Austrian one with the Taylor Swift concert, where the police were very open and transparent in reporting what they did and how they thwarted that. In these other criminal justice systems, the police are able to release more information. And we think in this social media digital age that the police need to be as transparent as possible to risk, to avoid risking public safety and unnecessary concerns in community detention. So that's the plan, Nick, and there's a couple of big things that are also going to happen later this year.
So when would the definitive result be? This year, the start of next year? When do you think we might attain it?
Well, these are significant changes, so there will be a public consultation and we'll go out.
What exactly will you ask the public then?
They can look at the whole authorised professional practice and make any comment on any aspect that the we're offering guidance to the police on. So it's a very broad public consultation on how the police should engage with media and social media.
Grateful for your time. Sir Andy Marshall, Chief Executive of the College of Policing, 8:29. Let's go back to the reality of life in Bournemouth. Janice is in Caterham, but you have a relative who lives in Bournemouth. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, I do. In fact, we spoke to her last night. She finished work yesterday, and as many people who live locally go down to the beach because it was a lovely, warm, sunny evening.
Oh, fantastic. Why
and
not?
Big concern. Lots of girls there in their skimpy bikinis, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
But you've got a migrant hotel very, very close by, and the migrants all sitting on the beach, leering and watching the girls. And I think it's just a recipe for disaster. Something's going to happen, and then somebody will wake up in this ridiculous government and make changes, whether or not to put them all in a camp. Putting them in a hotel in Bournemouth is just beyond the pale.
How concerned? Does your sister-in-law have a daughter, a young daughter who goes there or whatever it might be?
She's got a daughter who's older, but a younger granddaughter.
Oh,
but
granddaughter, point, I see, right.
The point I'm making, Nick, I spend a lot of time down in Bournemouth and down in Dorset, and as a youngster, it's a great place to go. My daughter went to university there. Lots of university students go there to the beach in the evening after studies. And at one point, there'll be something will happen, and it will make people sit up and think. The other aspect, and the reason why I wanted to call, is I feel sorry for all the families that have booked and saved all year to go and stay in a nice hotel in Bournemouth, and they're sitting on the beach, and they're surrounded by people who are laughing and smiling on the basis that they're there for nothing, and these poor people, the workers, as Mr. Starmer keeps referring to them, as those people who've saved hard all year to go on holiday, and they're now surrounded by people who they don't want to be with.
And who, as you say, are literally, in some instances, laughing at them. Janice, look after your family. Thank you for your input on that. Coming up later in the show, as it is revealed, 3.7 million people are now in what's called no-work dole. That means not only are they not in work, they don't need to seek work. That's greater than the population of Wales. Work and Pensions Secretary Liz Kendall said earlier in the year,
you will have to be in work. There isn't an option of a life on benefits. It is good for your future earning prospects, and it's good for your health.
Utter twaddle, as these figures show. More later in the show. It's 8:31. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. The news is Thomas Watts.
The policing ministers told Nick that forces should be as open and transparent as possible about suspects. New guidelines say they should disclose the ethnicity and nationality of some people who are charged. Facial recognition vans are to be rolled out across 7 more police force areas in England. The Home Office says they will be used to identify serious offenders following successful trials in London and South Wales. The Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has vowed to reject any plan to hand the Donbass region to Russia. He's warned redrawing Ukraine's eastern border would open the door for Vladimir Putin to start a third war. LBC weather, cloudy to start, then another warm and sunny day with a few thunderstorms later, a high of 33 degrees.
This is LBC.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Pump six in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
Okay.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Am I on a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6. T's and C's apply, subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
Have you ever wondered what a sandwich sounds like? Not much to it, is there? Unless, of course, it's a Walker's sandwich. Mmm, that is good. Now that's what Asani should sound like. Go all crisp in with Walkers. Delicious.
Outlet shopping at the O2. Get up to 70% off RRP on over 60 designer brands, including Nike, Adidas, Levi's, Sunglass Hut, The Cosmetics Company Store, Le Creuset, and more. Plus, why not make a day of it with over 30 bars and restaurants, a cinema, bowling, interactive football, and more. There's so much to do at the O2 this summer. Find us at North Greenwich, just 15 minutes from central London. Search Outlet Shopping at the O2 to start planning your visit.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Coming to more of your calls in just a moment. So some of the social media, we're still having issues, unfortunately, if you're trying to WhatsApp the show for whatever reason. But we are getting texts, and I think we're getting emails. Andy from Brighton. I was looking for a flat in Bournemouth near the town centre. I found a pub nearby, and I sat inside watching what was going on. And there was a fight outside involving around 10 men. I asked the landlady what was going on, called the police. She said, "Don't worry, it's just the migrants and the homeless fighting. It happens every day, and the police won't attend." Extraordinary. A lot of you are saying, yes, we do know the minister said 111 for non-emergency police issues. Frank, you've also pointed that out. Yes, it is 101. We should have. I'm happy to put the record straight. And of course, 11 is for the health service. One last one. Paul in Brentwood said, is the Home Office taking the mickey here, putting illegal immigrants into a hotel called Britannia? Well, let's talk more about that with Gary in Harlow. Gary, what are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Yeah, morning. It's just a really simple question. When they leave France and the border force pick them up, what's the reason why they can't take them back to where they once came?
Once they've done the 12 miles, they're in our waters.
Right, so if they were to intercept them in international waters, do you call it?
Yeah, border. I mean, let's say 11 miles, halfway. Then you've got to hope you can turn the craft around. It will almost certainly capsize because some of them are very flimsy. Then you've got the risk of people drowning.
And what I'm saying, if you transfer them from that dinghy onto the boat...
Oh, the French won't let us dock.
Right, OK.
So that's the problem.
So is that a good thing with Starmer to try and sort out with the French to say, you know, get that arrangement in place?
But they're delighted to see them go.
I know, I get that, because... And also, I'd really like to hear from the other side of the story, like, why don't they want to stay in France or any other European country? What's the attraction of coming to England? You know, why make that crossing when they're in a safe country and, you know, it's planted of quite a nice place?
Number of reasons. The language. Most of these individuals have grown up possibly listening to British or American music and the same television programmes, so they have a working knowledge, if not good knowledge, of English. Some of them have family already settled here, and according what Emmanuel Macron would say, it's far easier to disappear into, hopefully, as is still allowed to say, the black economy, the uncharted economy, whatever one says these days, because we don't have ID cards, so they can come in and work as delivery drivers, cleaning cars or whatever.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying, because, you know, there's got to be some solutions. It's some deterrent or some solution, because they said... you know, with all the stories you're reporting on lately and all the rest of it, you know, there's going to come to a boiling point or how much this costs this country on a regular basis, you know.
Well, that would be £6 million a day in hotel fees. And as we see in this video on TikTok or the coverage in one of the newspapers, within 2 days of arriving here, you're in a fairly nice £125 a night hotel room with free board and lodgings and a swimming pool. Gary, thank you. Paul's in Birmingham. Paul, what do you want to add to this conversation? Good morning. No, Paul? Paul?
Hello?
That's my Nick. Fault. How many years have I done? I've never pressed that button before. That's 21 years. I don't even know what that button did. Paul, sorry, you're on the radio, sir. Totally my fault. Go ahead.
Good morning, Nick. Hope you're well.
Morning. Not too bad at the moment. What are you going to tell me?
I just think that the common sense has gone out the window, and our governments, and I say governments loosely, seem to complicate everything. We need a simplistic approach to this. So, for me, I would stop paying the French money.
Yep.
I would invest that money into a border protection force and position armed, not deadly armed force, but armed soldiers along the coastlines. If you remember, back in the day, we used to have beacons that to warn the rest of the country that we was being invaded.
Why are we arming? Why are we arming them?
So basically, if they won't run, if, you know, when you approach them, they won't run off, the immigrants or the illegals or whatever you call them coming onto land.
They won't run off?
Tim, calling you Tim. Nick.
I've been called Ruth and Tim so far.
No, you can confuse me then.
Confusion.
Nick, so you've seen the videos where they land in the boats and they're like Linford Christie sprinting to the coast, you know, away to so they can get off into the sunset and hide into the dark web, as you call it.
Yeah.
So what we need to do is be able to to be able to protect our borders.
But you're not going to start. Well, are you suggesting we start shooting at them?
No, Nick.
No.
It's a deterrent.
Right.
It stops them in their tracks. So we see them. We're in a unique position that we're in an island.
Yes.
That is what has made us great in history, is the fact that we're an island and we can protect ourselves.
Right.
We've forgotten how to protect ourselves. In World War II, we had something called the Home Guard, which protected the border.
Right.
Let's not go on about mannering or stuff like that. But,
no, okay.
You know, but
come on, you stupid boy.
So, a common sense view is simplistic. Stop giving the French money, invest that money into a border protection force. Then install proper detention facilities which offer humane, basic amenities.
So not hotel rooms, as we currently do.
No. So you're saving £42 million a week straight away there, taking them out of the hotels, which can be reinvested into protecting our borders. You put them
Will be costs in running these camps, though, of course.
Of course, but the money that you're spending on the hotels and the money you're giving the French then gets put into protecting our borders.
Right. I see the way it's working. Paul, how likely do you think a government is to do that when you consider...
They don't think simple, do they? They think complicated and like to spend money and waste money and then put our taxes up.
Paul, I've enjoyed our conversation. Look after yourself. Thanks for your input, sir. And thanks for calling me Tim. That really took me by surprise. Anton is in Hampstead. Anthony, let's come back to our conversation about this particular town of Bournemouth. You have family there.
I have retired family there, and it's not pleasant walking in the evening anymore. It's over with. You know, it used to go for a walk, right, along the main road, the top of the pier, right, and it's just become very, very unpleasant. And I do have an idea, which I'd like to share with you, if I may.
Just expand on why it's unpleasant, and then, I want to hear your idea.
Because people walk along, and you get bumped into, and it is very intimidating. It is very, very intimidating when you go past. You know, I'm not saying you can't ban everybody from not smoking, but it's not that they're not just smoking on the sitting on the bench smoking. They're just, it's heavy, it's unpleasant.
Right.
There's no word.
You've got an idea, you said.
Yeah. I said the answer is we've given Ukraine £21 billion. Why don't we just, as they arrive, send them to the barracks in Ukraine, put up some porter cabins with our government offices there, process their asylum claim there, literally take them off as they land into Ukraine.
Right. I mean, I think an offshore processing centre is probably a good idea. I do think Rwanda was worth exploring, and I can understand why the Prime Minister was hopeful of getting something off the ground in Albania, but it never happened. Ukraine, they could all get hit by a Russian bomb.
No, they won't.
How do you know?
Well, because I go to Ukraine, right? I go to a place to Medvedchuk, right?
But and I can take. Why would the Ukrainians want to take our asylum seekers?
Well, why not? We've given them £21 billion. Why can't we take something in exchange for what we've given them?
They're holding the European line, is what they would say for that £21 billion.
We're giving them £21 billion.
Yes, I know.
Rachel and the account is screaming in accounts for money. She's giving £21 billion.
I know we said that three times. Yes, yes.
Yeah,
no, I don't see why they take them.
I'm sorry. We've given them, you know. All right. At the end of the day, Trump is not wrong when he says, you know, I'll give you money, but I want something in return.
Anthony, thank you. Let's see what... I'm going to file that as it's an idea. Jerry says, I lived in Bournemouth all my life. Once a beautiful seaside resort, now a grotty, ill-maintained town in rapid decline. Using hotels for asylum seekers is the icing on the cake. We're off to Scotland now. Rachel's in Lossiemouth. Hello, Rachel. What are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Hi. Morning, Nick. We had migrants up in our area for a couple of years.
Yes.
And I would often see them wandering about Elgin, the town.
Right.
Using the facilities, the colleges, the libraries. And we've got beaches here as well. And you know what they did at the beaches?
And we're sure these are asylum seekers, that these are people who are doing these things.
It was a migrant hotel, yes.
Okay, right. Yeah, okay, well, let's move on. What did they do?
They played cricket. You wouldn't believe it. They just came down to the beach in Lossiemouth and played cricket.
I think you're having sport with me, aren't you?
I am absolutely not. It was in Elgin. We had the far right come up here and felt like...
Well, they're allowed to play cricket, aren't they? Hang on, exactly. There's so many mixed messages.
Maybe England should just get out their footballs and start playing with people. Maybe talk to people. Maybe find out these stories these people have instead of accusing them of being terrorists.
Well, there's no accusing in Bournemouth.
I mean, that's
Farage's word. No. I mean, hang on a second. Slow down. There have been 116 charges against 51 asylum seekers living across three hotels in the past few weeks in Bournemouth. So that's not people I know you're having sort of... That's not people playing cricket on the beach or playing rounders or bowls or whatever it might be. That is people who are involved in potential criminal acts.
So what's going on in your communities with people? Are they being confrontational with these people rather than actually maybe opening your minds and just realising that's...
Why should a family who saved all their year to go and enjoy a holiday on the Dorset coast, why should they watch as people get the hotel rooms for free that they've had to work all year to pay for, Rachel?
Maybe the government should actually
No,
this is a government-made problem of putting people in hotels the way that they have. They have done this. Ask the government.
Well, I do. And they say, we're cracking down on the gangs. We're bringing in a one-in, one-out. We're getting better cooperation with the French, hotels, which is all palpable lies.
They're not talking about, actually, this is a Tory-made problem. They created the hotel idea. They wanted this rhetoric. They wanted it to go this way.
Why would the Conservatives want it to go this way when it probably was one of the reasons they were booted out?
Well, they had a massive problem, I tell you, because we're going back to Brexit. There's no way of returning people.
Oh,
maybe they should have put a bit of thought into what they were doing.
All right. Rachel, we're up to time. I must end it there. Coming up after the news, we will have a complete change of tack, and it's another case of no can do. We learnt yesterday that the amount of crime has soared on the London Underground and the DLR, Docklands Light Railway Network, since Sir Sadiq Khan became the mayor. Here he is talking about housing.
We'll deliver more affordable housing and infrastructure. From new rent-controlled homes to major transport upgrades, we want to make it easier to live, work and move around London.
Now, the Labour mayor said he would build up to 19,000 homes by March of next year. Currently, the figure is 347. So much as his promise to keep a police counter open in every London borough, this is another Mary Poppins promise. Pie crust promise. Easy to make, easy to break. 8:46 LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
Police forces are now being encouraged to disclose the ethnicity and nationality of some people who are charged. Facial recognition vans are to be rolled out across seven more police force areas in England, and President Zelensky has warned Russia could start a third war if it's handed territory in eastern Ukraine. LBC weather, cloudy to start, then another warm and sunny day, a high of 33 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The A12 remains closed northbound between junctions 18 at Danbury and 19 at the Boreham Interchange. It's after a car was on fire earlier. On the North Circular Road, the westbound exit slip road to Staples Corner remains closed, and that's because a car overturned. There are delays on the approach, but also on the M1 southbound. Very busy on the A2 westbound, heading towards the Ebbsfleet turnoff, and that's all down to an accident. It's slow heading up towards the Bean Interchange. In South Norwood, Manor Roads had to be closed both ways for emergency repair works, and that's causing delays in the area. Slightly better news on the Underground. Those delays on the Victoria line have now cleared, but there are still minor delays on the District line.
This is LBC.
When we're little, we don't overthink things. We're brave, confident, we laugh and ask questions.
And play!
and play. So why stop there? Just because we're adults, it shouldn't mean we stop trying new things. For me, starting a career in early years has meant not just a new job, but new skills, new friends.
Like me.
Yes, and a new sense of purpose. All that, and I can earn while I learn.
Yay, painting next.
Do something big. Work with small children. Search early years careers to find out more.
This is LBC. Listen on Global Player or the new LBC app. Download it from your app store now.
As a small business owner, you've got to be ready for the ups and the downs. Ready to think on your feet, ready to be rushed off your feet. Ready to make the big decisions and make the tea. Two sugars in mind? Ta. Ready to be there for your customers whenever they need you. Well, ditto. Virgin Media Broadband's ready for anything business can throw at it. Yeah, it's business ready broadband. Search Virgin Media Business Broadband.
Get the news your way and combine breaking news with expert opinion to see the full picture.
With award-winning journalism on air and in your hand, the LBC app puts you in control.
The biggest stories of the day delivered how you want it
and when you want it.
Download the LBC app now.
News your way.
Now in your hands.
I'm telling you, raise taxes, that's how.
Cut spending, less waste, more sense.
Move north, get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
But 9.13% fixed annual return with Cufflink. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest property-backed from £500. Hard not to agree. Visit cufflink.com. That's Cufflink. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to auto-invest and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA. Visit cufflink.com for full T's and C's.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
When you're smiling.
Don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling. Keep on smiling. And the whole world smiles with you.
Banningdental.co.uk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
10 minutes before nine. Oh, 10 minutes before nine. Let's take a change of tack and move into the housing area, in a housing crisis, and this is a case of another no can do. I speak of London Mayor Sir Sadiq Khan. Of course, we learned only this week that the number of crime has escalated since he became mayor. I think it's doubled on the London Underground and what's called the DLR. No statement around that. But here he is on social media talking about housing earlier this year.
Our London growth plan is about unlocking opportunity, driving investment, and ensuring every Londoner feels the benefits of a thriving economy. Here's how we'll make it happen. We'll deliver more affordable housing and infrastructure, from new rent-controlled homes to major transport upgrades. We want to make it easier to live, work, and move around London.
And what is the reality? Well, much like his promise to keep a police counter open in every London borough, I'm afraid it's completely shattered. He will aim to build 19,000 homes by March of next year. Yesterday, figures from the Greater London Authority said 347 affordable homes had started construction between April and June. Of the 19,000 affordable homes targeted, work had begun on 5,500, leaving the scheme in a total 13,500 homes short. Now, the Mayor of London's office blames the previous government, well, of course they would, the horrendous legacy, for making it harder and more expensive. Of course, everything is the previous government's fault. But what is the reality, and how are they ever going to hit that figure? Richard Blanco is a property expert and broadcaster. Back up a little here, Richard. What is the problem that they can't seem to be able to find a way through? Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Nick. It's happening too slowly, isn't it? I think it's absolutely laudable that, you know, the government wants to build 1.5 million homes over this parliament, and that Sir Sadiq Khan wants to build more affordable housing, but it's just taking too long to push through. These are supposed to be, I understand, 80% rent, so they're supposed to be more affordable, but we need more council homes as well, and, you know, we're not seeing enough of those coming through either.
So what are the hurdles?
Well, I think part of the problem is the cost of construction, and the construction seems to have slowed down over the last few years. We're not getting as much projects coming through as are needed. And, of course, planning constraints can also be a problem. But we just need the political will, really, to push these sorts of projects through at pace.
It was an ambitious target, much as the government's target to build 1.5 million homes over the life of its parliament. Are they attainable in reality?
Well, I suspect they won't be, and I'm very surprised that the government is sticking to this 1.5 million target. It's super ambitious. The planning changes that they're wanting to bring in are taking time. And also, the government doesn't control a lot of construction. Most of construction of new homes is controlled by a dozen major developers. So, it's down to them at the end of the day to bring forward projects and actually construct them. And there's a slight incentive for them to take their time because they don't want to bring house prices down by kind of flooding the market with new homes.
Well, let's move from central and local government. Let's get to the reality. What does it mean to people? What does it mean for property prices? What does it mean for property rentals?
Well, the problem has been lack of supply for the last decade at least. It means for property prices, they are going up gently at the moment. It's something like 2-3%. So, that's relatively stable. We are seeing in prime central London areas that prices are sort of falling back. And some people think that's because wealthier individuals are less likely to come here because of tax changes. In terms of rents, a big problem is that private landlords are spooked by a regulation that's coming forward in the Renters' Rights Bill, and also very angry about the way that they're taxed and the fact that mortgage interest rates are going up. So that's causing a lot of private landlords to think twice about whether they want to stay in the market, something like 40% thinking of selling up. And, that along with the fact that we're not building enough homes quickly enough is keeping rents quite buoyant. They're not going up as much as they did. The forecast is that they'll go up by something by like 3.5% over the next year, and the Office of National Statistics shows them going up at about 6% at the moment.
Lastly, there's Chief Executive of the building materials firm Marshalls, Matt Pullen, says that there was uncertainty created by the budget, which is weighing on individuals and business confidence. Is there a confidence issue in the housing sector?
I think there is. I mean, if you think about the Property Investor Show, which normally happens every October at Excel, it's actually been cancelled this year because there is an issue around confidence, yes. And I think people are, certainly in the private rented sector, are uncertain about what's going to happen because the Renters' Rights Bill. And, all of the costs that have been placed on employers, particularly by the additional national insurance, is having an effect on lots of different sectors, not just retail and hospitality. So I think people are holding their breath until the budget this October to see what sort of tax increases the Chancellor brings forward.
Grateful for your time, Richard Blanco, property expert and broadcaster, 9:05. Let's pick up on our conversation about the dream holiday that is now a holiday nightmare of Bournemouth. Paul's in Marylebone. Now, Paul, this affects you personally, I understand. Good morning.
Yeah, hi, Nick. Morning. Forgive me, I'll get a bit tongue-tied. My daughter's waiting on her results tomorrow, like many other kids, for their A-level, for this, to get into unis. And she put down Southampton number one, Bournemouth number two.
Right.
Southampton said, right, we need three A's. Bournemouth said, unconditional.
What does she want to read?
Law.
Right, okay.
So, it was just odd that Bournemouth came back with unconditional. It's like, well, you haven't really got a try, you'll get a space. And then the penny didn't drop till some of our friends who also applied, they've also been given this unconditional offer. So Bournemouth must know that they're going to lose people. So they just basically just turn up without any grades and you're getting, but it's the worry of the sex of the tax. She's 18, going down there, first year she's on campus, but after that she's going to be out in the wild world of Bournemouth, and I'm very worried about it.
How are you going to react when the grades come through? So, sorry, remind me, how many, is it four you list universities? I can't remember, it has changed.
No, two. Two.
Oh, you only list two these days, do you?
Yeah, apparently. I don't know. Look, but she was allowed to list two, so she lived Southampton and Bournemouth.
I thought you listed four. What do I know? Okay, so how will you feel if your daughter does end up going to... Well, actually, let me rephrase that. Will you try and talk her out of it?
Well, no, what my wife has told us to do, apparently I'm taking the day off tomorrow, she's got the day off, we're going to ring around to do clearing, or so it's called,
where we
ring up all the other unis and see what we can get into. So if she doesn't get Southampton, we're going to try and get into Portsmouth or Leicester or... We just don't want to go into Bournemouth because I'm just so concerned about it.
Is there not still something called UCAS, University Clearing System or something?
Yes, that's what we've got to do. We've got to ring
around. I don't think you have to ring.
Space.
Do you not ring UCAS themselves?
We've got to ring, apparently.
Oh, right.
And we tell them that what she's got, like if she's got freebies, and then they'll come back during the day with a decision. You know more than me.
Well, I don't know that I do. I mean, my children are in their 30s now. Actually, I think they both get what they wanted, I think. Well, look, good luck. I tell you what, stay tuned tomorrow. Obviously, we're going to do something about A-level result day. I'm 90% certain. Well, I know UCAS is the agency to which you go. I thought they did a lot of that for you. A lot of it is done online. The idea you'd have to start ringing, trying to get through to Leicester University or Loughborough University or anywhere else. University of Bradford or something. I mean, it's going to be hard work, isn't it? Paul, let us know what happens. Thank you for that. Good luck to your girl. Let's get one last call in on this. Cliff in Cobham. You're on the radio, Cliff. Morning.
Oh, good morning, Nick.
Yes.
We've given the French government about 700 million to help prevent illegal immigration.
We have, over the last few years, yep.
Well, perhaps that money would have been better spent by giving each French policeman that slashed a boat a bonus of about 10K.
Yeah, they can't, because if somebody drowns, they're culpable. You're talking about a French policeman, obviously, are you?
They did it once in shallow waters,
because it was filmed. They are culpable. If they slash the boat and someone falls in and drowns, that officer will go to jail. That's the problem.
Well, we have a small rescue team. But, I mean, if they've done it once, they could do it again.
Well, you would have hoped so, wouldn't you? And the British government have lauded those actions, but it's interesting, because if they had more video, you know it would be out there. It's, to my knowledge, never been done since. Cliff, I hear your frustration, but the music means we must move on. And we move on by looking at the number of people who aren't moving at all. They're on what's called no work doles, 3.7 million, more than the population of Wales. Work and pension secretaries, Liz Kendall.
Millions of people who could work, trapped on benefits. And taxpayers paying millions more on the costs of failure.
But nothing has been done. Plus, driving tests, hill start, 3-point turn, emergency stop, plus... Now you need to learn to do CPR too. Those stories and more after 9 o'clock news.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, ministers have welcomed a push for police forces to release more information about suspects' backgrounds. The interim guidelines say ethnicity and nationality information should be shared after a series of controversial cases. They were issued by the National Police Chiefs Council and College of Policing. Its chief executive, Sir Andy Marsh, has been speaking to Nick.
This guidance applies from this morning, and we've thought it through, discussed it with partners in the courts, in the CPS, and I've spoken to every chief constable about it last week, and this will bring greater consistency to the transparency that we need, actually, when the public are very concerned about what's happening in their communities.
Police facial recognition vans are to be rolled out in 7 more force areas in England. The technology scans the faces of people walking past and checks the images against a list of wanted people. Policing Minister Dame Diana Johnson's told Nick it is already working in London.
Over the course of the last year, 580 arrests for rape, people suspected of rape or GBH or robbery, serious offending, domestic abuse as well, and also sex offenders who are out in the community, who are breaching their conditions of being out in the community.
The privacy group Big Brother Watch says it's an alarming expansion of the surveillance state. Sir Keir Starmer is due to take part in virtual talks ahead of Donald Trump's Alaska summit with Vladimir Putin. The Prime Minister will co-chair talks with Kiev's European allies. He'll then be joined by Mr. Trump and Vice President J.D. Vance. Ukraine's Volodymyr Zelensky has warned he will reject any proposal to hand over the Donbass in eastern Ukraine. A group of MPs is calling for all under-22s in England to be given free bus travel, as they are in Scotland. The Transport Select Committee says it would improve young people's access to work and skills opportunities. And Treasury officials are reportedly considering changes to inheritance tax ahead of the budget. It's understood the rules around gifting, allowing people to pass on assets tax-free before they die, could be tightened. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was up 32 at 91.79. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather, quite cloudy to start, then a warm and sunny day with some thunderstorms possible later. A high of 33 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
So, what are you watching at the moment?
Squid Game, Dad.
Let's watch it together this weekend. That'd be nice. What's it on again?
Netflix. You've got EETV, so you just switch it on.
What season are we up to?
Four. That's Stranger Things, Mum.
And what about the kids?
Don't worry, they'll watch Cocomelon for the 100th time.
Switch on Netflix with EETV, plus change up sports and entertainment. It's TV with the ultimate flex for the whole family.
EETV requires EE broadband. Separate 24-month contracts for TV and broadband. Content may vary, terms apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 3 minutes after nine, Wednesday, August the 13th. Who remembers that famous advertising slogan or poster, Labour isn't working? Well, it takes you back to Thatcher days, but it seems highly appropriate now as 1 million more Britons have been signed off for work for good under Labour. It's called a no-work dole. Not only do you not do any work, you don't need to seek work, and we pay you? How has that ever come about? Plus, nowadays, you still have to know your stopping distances. You might have to know parallel parking or rear bay parking. But learner drivers will also be tested on their CPR skills. Where is it going to end? Well done. Now, next question. How would you split the atom? How would you bring about peace in the Middle East? It's asking a lot, isn't it? Or is it a necessary advance? Plus, we'll come back to FCRs, facial recognition, FRCs, facial recognition cameras. Policing Minister Dame Diana Johnson might have got her phone numbers wrong, but she said this about the idea.
We want to give the police the tools they need to keep us safe. And live facial recognition is a tool which I'm a big fan of. And we're going to roll out 10 vans around 7 police forces.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Question for you. What was the welfare state created? Why do we have benefits? Well, benefits are some people because they have all sorts of issues, whether they have physical issues, mental health issues, and they can't go to work. Welfare state to be there to support you, to help you if sadly you lost your job, and then find more work. So why has there been this seismic change that we now have more people on benefits without having to look for a job, no requirement for them to look for a job, than the entire population of Wales? 3.7 million are now in what's classed as the no-work requirement. That's gone up from 2.67 million. So it's a million since Labour got into power. Just for reference, if it's important to you, the Welsh population stands at 3.1 million. So that's 3.7 no-work. Now, no-work means not only are they not in work, but they don't have to look for work. Now, some will be of pensionable age. Others have a child under one. Others are those are designated as carers. Others have illness. Others are considered, quote, to have no prospect of work. What does that mean? 46% of all universal credit claimants now are on what's called the no-work dole. 46%. Now, again, some of those will be of pensionable age. Some of them will be with severe disabilities. I get it. But it's grown by a million. And yet, here is the relevant government minister or Secretary of State, Work and Pension Secretary, Liz Kendall, talking of a crackdown as recently as March.
Disabled people and people with health conditions who can work should have the same rights, choices and chances to work as everybody else. Yeah. That principle of equality is vital too. Because far from what members opposite would have you believe, many sick and disabled people want to work with the right help and support. And unlike the Conservatives, that is what we will deliver.
Now, wherever you look, you have to accept, and everyone, you can see it from another planet, that the British economy, as with many other economies, by the way, is quite fragile at the moment.
So how are we meant to sustain paying for 8 million people on UC, Universal Credit? Liam Halligan, economist, journalist and broadcaster, writes for the Sunday Telegraph, the Economic Agenda column, joins me now. Fresh figures, but your interpretation of them, Liam. Good morning.
Morning to you, Nick. Well, look, I completely concur with what you said in your introduction, your sentiment. The welfare state's there for a reason. It was created by Beveridge after the Second World War. It was a leap forward in our civilization, being there for people who need it at certain times of their life. But it was meant to be there as a safety net, Nick. It's become a lifestyle choice, increasingly so. You know, there are, you know, obviously lots and lots of people who need the welfare state, but we need to be clear here. There are an awful lot of people who don't need it, but are using it anyway. So many people who you come across, they want to work. They're decent people. They know that it's better if they get up and go to work. But the way the system is incentivised, the way the so-called benefit tapers work, it just doesn't make any sense for their family if they go to work, because they would lose so many benefit entitlements that their family will be worse off. So it's literally kind of forced idleness. And then there are other people, you talked about that shocking increase in universal credit payments just in the last year, who are just chancers and opportunists. A quarter of the workforce is now on universal credit. It's basically started big time under Brown. It was all about creating people who were like client voters. They get a lot of money from the states. They'd always vote for Labour. And yet now here we are, where the British government is borrowing 15, 20 billion quid a month. And we're spending three quarters of that money that we're borrowing each month paying the interest on our existing debts. It's completely unsustainable with the best will in the world.
Liam, if you recall events made by the Prime Minister, despite having a parliamentary majority, the envy of almost every previous administration, attempts to have welfare reform were dashed because of the rebellion. You can't see any likelihood of this change. Oh, how likely is it it could change with the current administration?
I don't think it will change with the current administration. And let's be clear, even on the official forecasts, the bill for universal credit is due to go up from about 80 billion to almost 100 billion in this parliament. So, you know, it's going up hugely, and the welfare cuts, so-called, to health and sickness benefits. Again, they weren't reductions in spending. They were slowdowns in the rate of growth of spending. And even those didn't work. And you played that clip with Welfare Secretary Liz Kendall earlier. You know, I've known Liz Kendall for many years. She does get it. She desperately wants to rein in this bill. She's from that kind of tradition of the Labour Party, the sort of right of the Labour Party, the sort of Hattersleyites, if you like, from way back in old money. You know, she understands the public finances. She's a clever woman. And yet she's totally boxed in by the left of her party that's increasingly empowered and shrill, and it's got its blood up, you know.
So let's look, lastly,
marching to the Red Queen's tune, Angela Rayner. And as she has more power now in the parliamentary party and across the Labour movement, the likes of Liz Kendall, the sort of so-called sensible left, are just being walloped.
Let's lastly then look at the opposition. If this were to be taken up in greater part by Kemi Badenoch for the Conservatives, Nigel Farage for Reform UK, how much of a vote winner do you think this could be?
Well, you know, there's a silent majority, isn't there, across the UK, the silent majority of people who get up, go to work and do the best for their family and who are sick and tired of this. I think the Overton window is shifting now. It's becoming completely socially acceptable to talk about this stuff, just like it's, you know, there are lots of benefit scroungers and we don't want to pay for them to lay in bed all day. Mm. Just like it's becoming socially acceptable now to saying, oh, maybe these people that have come to the country illegally shouldn't be allowed to stay in the country under any circumstances. I think the Tories are trying to get hold of this, but again, the left of the Tory party is really squeamish. Kemi Badenoch doesn't want to upset the left of her MPs who are closer to Lib Dems in the Conservative Party, because she's absolutely traumatised by the psychodrama of endless leadership changes that she's seen since she came into Parliament in 2019. And Nigel Farage, you know, who's got his finger on the political pulse, he knows that a lot of his voters are in the red wall. A lot of his voters, potentially, are former Labour voters. And so that's why, in some senses, he has to ride two horses here. On the one hand, he wants to talk to voters who want the government to get hold of this and spend responsibly. On the other hand, he wants to try and go after, you know, ex-Labour voters who quite like a big welfare state. I think in the end, and I hate to say this, the political class, the media class's hand is going to be forced because financial markets are just going to not have it anymore. This situation where we're spending so much money each month that we're borrowing, with so much of that going on debt interest. You and I have talked about it in the past. It's completely unsustainable.
Liam, I must end it there. Always good to have you on. Liam Halligan, thank you. You write the Sunday Telegraph's Economic Agenda column. You are an economist and broadcaster journalist. Thank you for that. Just before I go to my next guest, did you know now that, if you recall how shot through the Greek economy was, do you remember a few years ago? They have a better credit rating than the United Kingdom now, as they've clawed their way out of the financial crisis. So the markets would rather lend to a country such as Greece than they would to the United Kingdom. Let's explore the abuse in more detail. Rachel Charlton-Daly is a disability rights journalist and joins me now. How much do you think the system needs an overhaul or a review? Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, it does. It needs a complete overhaul and review. But to be honest with you, it's not going to be in the way that your last guest likes, because it needs to be more compassionate. There needs to be more actual allowance for people with different disabilities and different needs to be able to get what they need. Because you talk a lot about getting people into work, but there's beyond talking about it, there's not actually much done. You know, access to work is being slashed. They're not really doing anything, despite saying they're going to get people into work. They're going to do all of these things, cutting the benefits of people who need them to get into work in the first place, such as they were talking about cutting PIP. And they were talking, and obviously the
well, that didn't go ahead, of course, did it, Rachel?
No, that didn't go ahead, but, you know, they were talking quite heavily about that. And there's all of the things of universal credit. A lot of people who work need universal credit because of the price of food and the price of bills. Like, you know, their pay just isn't enough. There's a lot of people who work.
But how are we... In some instances, people are in receipt of payments for acne, and they're not getting enough...
I hate this conversation, I do, because it's just not... It's never the main cause. It's never the main reason, you know? You've got to list to be able to get benefits. You've got to list every single thing that is possibly wrong with you. It's not going to just because of acne that you get... It's just not true.
Going on?
I mean... There's abuse in everything, but what is actually happening
right
in a lot?
It
doesn't. But what is happening in a lot of cases is, and especially the reason that universal credit has suddenly, especially in the last year, just gone up really high, is that people who have had these legacy benefits for years and years and years, such as employment support allowance, they all got told they now have to move over to universal credit, and that happened in the last autumn and this spring. So of course we're going to see a huge increase in universal credit when all of these people are going to be forced from the benefits that they were told that they were entitled to because they couldn't work, now having to claim universal credit. So of course we're going to see a huge increase.
How would you rework the system?
I would make it more compassionate. I would make it so that there is job support, that there's actual job support, and so that it means that people who can work are given the tools to get into work, and it's not just lip service. Because
Rachel, always enjoy speaking with you. Thank you for that, Rachel Charlton-Daly, disability rights journalist. Calls coming in on that and later in the show. We'll also be looking at the fact that these new cameras that are arriving, facial recognition cameras, and how successful they've been. But are there concerns about privacy? 9:15, LBC News headlines, Thomas Watts.
The policing ministers told Nick that forces should be as open and transparent as possible about suspects' backgrounds. Controversial facial recognition vans are to be rolled out across 7 more force areas in England. And President Zelensky has warned Russia could start a third war if it's handed the Donbass in eastern Ukraine. LBC weather, cloudy to start, then another warm and sunny day, a high of 33 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the A12. It remains closed northbound between junctions 18 at Danbury and 19 at the Boreham Interchange. It was after a car was on fire earlier. The M25 is very busy anti-clockwise at junction 10 at the A3. And that's because a car's broken down on the exit slip road, but there are delays back into the main carriageway. On the North Circular Road, the westbound exit slip road at Staples Corner remains closed. It was after that car broke down earlier. Very busy in South Norwood. Manor Road remains closed in both directions for the emergency repair works. On the Underground, the Victoria line is suspended between Walthamstow Central and Seven Sisters, and then there are minor delays on the rest of the line.
This is LBC. This is Go.Compare FM reporting from Sabby Street, where mysterious moustaches are appearing on residents' faces. So, your tash, where did it come from?
I was sorting out my car insurance at Go.Compare and it appeared out of nowhere.
Madam, your moustache is magnificent.
I packed a great deal on home insurance and this savvy tash grew on me.
And resident cat, your whiskers have gone from meh to marvellous. How? Could have explained your pet insurance deal better myself. Britain, get in on the tash action. Be savvy. Fill the deal at
Go.Compare.
Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060973, LBC.
At TfL, we're helping to make bus journeys greener. Our entire bus fleet is 100% low or zero emission at the tailpipe, including those for our Superloop routes, helping improve air quality for all. And we'll have a fully zero emission fleet by 2034. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Keeping your smile healthy. At Darwood & Tanner, it's our sole purpose and absolute obsession. Whether you're missing a single tooth or many teeth, our streamlined patient journey, world-class dental practitioners and advanced implant technology will get you smiling again quicker, more comfortably and in the least invasive way. Darwood & Tanner. For our most comprehensive, tailored and complete dental implant treatment, visit darwoodandtanner.co.uk.
So, what are you watching at the moment?
Squid Game, Dad.
Let's watch it together this weekend. That'd be nice. What's it on again?
Netflix. You've got EETV, so you just switch it on.
What season are we up to?
Four. That's Stranger Things, Mum.
And what about the kids?
Don't worry, they'll watch Cocomelon for the 100th time.
Switch on Netflix with EETV, plus change up sports and entertainment. It's TV with the ultimate flex for the whole family.
EETV requires EE broadband. Separate 24-month contracts for TV and broadband. Content may vary, terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Coming to you, Denise, in South London. You'll be the first call on this. Just to do, we're getting a more social media, and we're still not cracked WhatsApps, I'm afraid to say, but we are now getting emails, we're getting texts. I was going to say we're getting faxes. That'll be something. Wouldn't you have faxes? Whole generation now looking at each other and wonder what a fax was. Nicola in Kent, what are the Labour government supposed to do? The minute they try to sort out the welfare and benefits, all the right-wing press and people like you come down like a ton of bricks. The moment they leave it, the same thing happens. They're in between a rock and a hard place. Well, you've put a half place. I think you mean a half place. Nicola, this is a Labour government that had a majority of 170. I think that's been whittled down to 155, I think, 155, but don't quote me. But certainly, it's a north of 150 anyway. And they balked, I love that word, balked, at reforming the welfare bills because they're so frightened of the left wing of the party. That's the reality. Dear God, if you can't do something with a majority of 150, whatever, I say 155. Andy in Portsmouth, there must be a bigger gap between those who work full-time on minimum wage and those who work part-time and have benefits topping up their wage. It can't be right. Someone who works part-time gets almost the same as a full-time worker. Benefits are too generous and need cutting. Denise is in South London. What's your story, Denise? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Thanks for taking my call.
Not at all.
I've got quite a bit to say, really. I mean, you asked one of the other callers about how would you reboot the system.
Yes.
I think there's a lot to identify and to say about that with the work coaches in the job centres, for example.
Right.
They're not given enough time to actually get people into work. It's a fact. And there should be far more collaboration from the ground up. That we keep getting sort of like the work coaches and the civil servants are actually being, you know, suppressed almost into being dictated what to do.
Why do we need work coaches?
Sorry?
Why do we need
work coaches? Will assist those people and get them into provisions, because there are a lot of people that do have barriers to work, such as you said, they're not well. And some people really do want to work when they've got health conditions, but obviously some can't.
Are you able to find work?
Sorry?
You're able to find work.
Well, I am in work.
Yes. So what is it that makes someone unable to get a job?
Right, so it could be they need some qualifications to be more ready for the 21st century and work.
They go to college then, don't they?
Well, yeah, but the job centre has a lot of provisions for people.
Not if they have mental health issues, I stress, but in some instances it's not healthy to keep helping these people in this fashion. It would be so much healthier to let them do it on themselves and actually develop a degree of responsibility.
Most people self-serve themselves into jobs.
Right.
But the hard to shift, who you mentioned earlier, back to work, some of them have got family lifestyles where they've always been on benefit because they're working cash in hand, there's a lot of living together, and that's a big thing that the government needs to tackle, this cash in hand work. Right. You know, there's not enough investigation.
If I pay my hairdresser or whatever, why should someone investigate that?
Well, most hairdressers are, you know, they're paying part of their tax and everything else, and they've got their business.
So what's
expenses.
The problem paying cash in hand? I don't know what my tax affairs of my hairdresser are.
Well, cash in hand is not. There's no tax going back into the economy.
Right. Well, how do you know that? I don't understand. How do you know
there is the black market. You pay your hairdresser, whether it's by, you know, credit card or, you know, debit card or... Yes,
well, no, if I give them cash... No, you're saying cash in hand. But you don't know that they're not declaring that cash, do you?
It's a fact, Nick, that there's plenty... there's bar staff, of course. There's bar staff that get cash in hand. There's lots of areas...
But why would you want to go after people who are working when there's 8 million people who aren't working?
But we're missing a lot of economy in money in tax as well, Nick. It's a fact.
But we've never been so taxed. A courtesy of the Conservatives who started it and Labour who haven't changed it. We've never been so taxed so highly in our lives.
Well, yeah, I can agree.
You
but
can't
there's also
want
a lot
more
that we're
tax.
Missing. Because the government is tolerating far too much cash in hand. People living together that are actually claiming two rents. There's a lot of that going on.
All right. Denise, thank you. I mean, it's a view, but I don't know if we can put it all down, can we, necessarily to cash in hand, but thank you for that. Anastasio, more calls coming in, but I have got an opportunity to go forward by going back to the future, as it were, because I want to go back to a conversation that I was having with the policing minister, Dame Diana Johnson. We're talking about how changes will be made. Two areas, one of the use of these facial recognition cameras, and the minister pointed to great success in the Met area. And the fact, and we have tried this, by the way, and each of us who live in London, well, the Met were up to speed, but we've looked at some counters outside as well. It does seem, if you get hold of your local police force on the website, and then put in your postcode, there will be a named officer. It was expanded upon by Dame Diana Johnson in the previous hour.
Well, I'm very pleased that we're going to have 3,000 additional police officers and PCSOs by the end of this financial year in our communities. And they've also committed police forces to responding within 72 hours to any inquiries that are made by local people to those neighbourhood teams. So that's number one. Number two is we want to give the police the tools they need to keep us safe. And live facial recognition is a tool which I'm a big fan of. And we're going to roll out 10 vans around 7 police forces to actually extend the use of live facial recognition. We're doing this because we know in London, where it's been used effectively over the course of the last year, 580 arrests for rape, people suspected of rape or GBH or robbery, serious offending, domestic abuse as well, and also sex offenders who are out in the community, who are breaching their conditions of being out in the community. So it's a really powerful tool for policing, and I want to see it used more in other forces.
Two areas to explore then, with Conservative peer and former Deputy London Mayor for Policing and Crime, Stephen, now Lord Greenhalgh. Good to have you on, Lord Greenhalgh. It's been too long. I trust you and your family are well. Let's start with this idea that you can immediately find out your neighbourhood officer. You can get his or her or their names. Going to work? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, listen, this has been in place for years, but It's, you know, a response to a crime within 72 hours seems a pretty lame guarantee to me. What communities want to see is police officers walking and available in their neighbourhoods, not via a website. I mean, it is useful to have with a number of front counters that are closing, particularly in London. But, yeah, I don't think it's something to be particularly excited about.
What struck me is, and look, and I don't want to be any improvement, any number is an improvement, but 3,000 new neighbourhood officers and PCSOs for the whole of the, well, sorry, for certainly for England and Wales. That's, to me, you're a policing expert, that doesn't seem a vast number, Lord Greenhalgh.
No, well, that's my first reaction. And the numbers are not earth-shattering. And for instance, we put 2,500 extra officers in neighbourhood under Mayor Johnson. So
you put 2,500 in the Met
alone? That's in London alone. That's not nationally. So that's it's a small number, given that we have, you know, well north of 100,000 police officers nationally. It seems a small number to me. But equally, you know, making a big play about how you respond to them via a website is also not the way forward, really.
You mentioned a previous mayor. Can I talk to you, Lord Greenhalgh, about the current mayor? He gave a promise not that long ago that a police counter would stay open in every single London borough. We know that, unfortunately, that promise has dissolved into dust. How significant is that to you?
I think it's very significant. It's the, as you centralise policing and the policing model, to actually move away from, there used to be about 128 front counters, that was too many, but reducing them to around 65, you at least had one 24/7 front counter in every London borough. Now you have a situation where it's less than one front counter open in a borough. My own borough is going to lose its last front counter in Hammersmith, where I was council leader before being deputy mayor. I think it's just the wrong thing. It's the police retreating into themselves. Public need to have an opportunity to be able to engage.
Lastly, no retreating with the deployment of new technology. These live facial recognition LFR vans are rolled out now after a successful pilot by the Met. Your view on that?
Well, I'm all for technology. ANPR, CCTV, facial recognition, that helps us catch criminals. It's worked in London and it should work nationally. But this is only 7 police force areas benefiting. There are many that won't. And so, you know, we need to see the technology road rolled out further and faster.
Always good speaking to you, Stephen. Look after yourself. Luke Greenhalgh, thank you. Former Deputy London Mayor for Policing and Crime, Conservative peer. Let's pick up. If you want to talk about that, do please get a call in. Our calls are coming in on facial recognition, but we must go to those who've been talking about the shake-up of the benefit system. Anastasia's in Leeds. Hello, you're the Anastasia I've spoken to before, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Hello, one of my colleagues once watched a budget with you, as I recall, or something. Good morning.
You're absolutely correct. Yeah. There's not that many people with the name Anastasia.
No, that's right.
Fair point. For the record, my surname's Tempest, so it's an interesting combination.
Well, I don't normally take people's last names, but as you've chosen to share it with us, you should have been an author. Well, there's still time. You need to be an author with a name like Anastasia Tempest. That's phenomenal.
Well, I have actually written a book. Oh. But that's another story.
All right,
now,
then.
I've written, the thing is, I did write a couple of things here.
Mm.
Cash in hand has actually got nothing to do with it.
That was Denise who's very angry about that, yes.
I felt rather irritated
right.
off topic. And now, I wrote a word here, opportunities. Now, I feel, I mean, for myself, I can only speak for myself. I mean, I feel, I'm going to use a strong word, I feel like I'm rotting away. I'm housebound.
Just remind the listeners your condition, of course.
Yeah, I've got cerebral palsy, use a wheelchair. I usually use an electric wheelchair, but I haven't got one. So I've got an epoxy manual wheelchair.
Right.
And it's very difficult.
So where's your electric one gone? Is it broken?
Well, it's broken beyond repair, so it's in the wheelchair graveyard now.
Oh, right.
So.
Oh, Lord. Are you... Sorry, do you have to save up for another one? Is it provided for you?
Yes, I do. You can say, don't walk on eggshells. I don't walk on eggshells. I've got a leg to stand on.
No, but I didn't know this...
I can say that literally.
Right, okay, right. You can do these gags, I can't. But I didn't know whether it was provided for by a system or whether you have to save up to get yourself a new...
I have to save up for it. You can get a contribution, like a wheelchair voucher from the NHS.
Okay, I need to get to the news. So make the number one point you wrote down before I go to the news, to Anastasia. You've talked about Denise. What's the point you want to make?
Well, we need more opportunities. I need more opportunities.
Why aren't work coaches helping you?
No, I'm thinking about going back to university, doing broadcast journalism. There's a good course in Leeds, actually.
Well, the people I work with, honestly, if they've got qualifications, anyone can get it. So, Joe, I look forward to you being the producer within a year. Anastasia, where did I get Joe from? Oh, because of these emails I'm going to write. Anastasia, look after yourself. Joe, I'll come to you later with the points that you want to make. Anastasia, have yourself a good day. Coming up after the news, you decide you want to go for a driving test. What's the stopping distance in the wet if you're travelling at 30 miles an hour? How long will it take to stop? Can you do a reverse bay parking for me, please? What's that licence plate over there? Oh, and... good at you at CPR? That's another requirement. 9:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. The news is with Thomas Watts.
Police forces are now being encouraged to disclose the ethnicity and nationality of some people who are charged. The update to the guidelines follows a series of controversial cases in which authorities were accused of a cover-up. Controversial facial recognition vans are to be rolled out across 7 more force areas in England. The Home Office says they will be used to identify serious offenders following successful trials in London and in South Wales. President Zelensky has warned Russia could start a third war if it's handed territory in eastern Ukraine. He's vowed to reject any peace deal that would cede the Donbass region ahead of Donald Trump's summit with Vladimir Putin on Friday. LBC weather, another warm and sunny day for most, a few thunderstorms possible later. A high of 33 degrees.
This is LBC.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
With over 50 years' experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools, and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
Ears are great, aren't they? One on each side of your head for stereo. It's because of ears that radio ads can amplify your advertising. 40 million adults listen to commercial radio every week. That's 80 million ears, give or take. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Make the O2 your playground this summer. Test your football skills at Toca Social. Take to the skies at iFly indoor skydiving or challenge your friends at Boom Battle Bar. Let the kids burn off energy at Oxygen Active Play. Perfect your game at Paddle Social Club or test your reflexes in the world of Activate. There's something for everyone at the O2. Feeling hungry? Choose from over 30 bars and restaurants and discover flavors from around the world. Search Do More at the O2 to start planning your perfect day.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's just read a couple of emails. That's why I was mentioning Joe in Bromley on the difficulty in getting jobs. Joe says, I'm female, I'm 55, I'm looking for an office job. The online job applications, good Lord, want to know my age, my ethnicity, my religious beliefs, my sexuality, my marital status, what my father did for a job when I was 14. Is this true? Oh, no, I have to take what you say. All I want is an admin job. This has happened with numerous online applications. I'm not fitting the mould. It's not spelt like that, by the way. It's so unfair to be judged without even looking at my CV. That seems extraordinary that they do all of that. I didn't know they could do that. I thought that was illegal. Victoria is commenting on the caller Denise's views about cash in hand. She says it's wrong. I used to work in a pub, and although I did get paid in cash, I had an official payslip that came with it every week, detailing how much NI, National Insurance, I paid, and any other deductions that we're taking. Saying people who work in pubs and bars aren't paying tax is rubbish. All right, let's come to other matters. And the idea that learner drivers will be quizzed on their knowledge of CPR in a significant update to the theory test. The Driver and Vehicle Standards Agency said motorists are often first on the scene when someone suffers a cardiac arrest. Adding questions on cardiopulmonary resuscitation and defibrillators to the exam from early next year means candidates will have a better understanding of the skills to use in an emergency. More than 40,000 people in the UK suffer an out-of-hospital cardiac arrest each year. Good God. That's almost... Good gracious me. It's about 1,000, just under 1,000 a week, isn't it? Fewer than one in 10 make it through. Hang on. Nine in ten do. So that's, I mean, we can celebrate that, can't we? But should they be doing this? Dr. Daniel Tardo is cardiologist and clinical research fellow at St. George's Hospital in Tooting in London and joins me now. Good to have you on, Doctor. If I said to you or your son or daughter or niece or nephew phoned you up and said, I need to know a little bit about CPR for my driver's test, my theory test, what do you think they should be learning? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Thank you for having me on.
Not at all.
I guess just coming back to the numbers that you mentioned, it's quite shocking, and I think your reaction captured how important this is. What would I be teaching them? So I guess cardiopulmonary resuscitation is quite straightforward. It can be an overwhelming concept to begin with, but when you break it down, it's actually quite simple. There's the concept of hands-only CPR. So essentially going through your first aid approach of assessing the situation for danger, checking if the person's responsive or not. And if not, we don't check for a pulse anymore. We go straight into it. We get next to the person's body, put our hands over their chest, over the breastplate, and start. The rate is about 100 to 120 compressions per minute. We don't need to do breaths anymore. It's very straightforward. And obviously, on top of that, learning about defibrillation is very important.
How do you know the right bit to hit? Because we're going to be doing it to Staying Alive, aren't we? The song from the movie Staying Alive. But which bit of my chest are you going to have to... Well, you'll be all right. But will the stranger have to hit?
Yes. Yeah, so as I mentioned, the breastplate. So at the midpoint of the chest wall, just where the ribs attach.
Okay. Okay. So halfway up from the navel, heading towards your sort of breast area.
A little bit further up than halfway.
A little bit
exactly.
Further up, okay.
Between the nipples, essentially.
Oh, between the... Oh, right. Oh, is that where we got to go? Oh, okay, okay. And how long do you keep it going for?
Essentially, it's continuous. We prioritise getting a defibrillator attached early, depending on the one's location, whether one's available. Mm. But obviously calling emergency services early to make sure the right help and support are on the way is crucial, but it is continuous.
How confident are you that everyone would be able to assist in this?
With the right education and training, I think it's a very important public health initiative. Really, as long as someone's physically able and can get down next to someone and provide the treatment, it's very accessible for most people in the public.
How do you know it's working?
So essentially, yeah, it's a bit hard to measure the depth of compression, but your whole body is going into each of the compressions. We say we aim for a depth of about 5 centimetres, and if someone else is available, they can check to see if there's a pulse with every compression to see if we are circulating the blood. But
is that what you're doing then? Effectively, you're keeping the heart pumping blood through the body. Is that what you're trying to take control of?
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. How long do you, if he, she seems fairly unresponsive, how long do you go on with them?
You keep going until emergency services arrive. Then they take over, make their assessment, and take the individual to A&E. The decision to stop comes from someone medical in a clinical environment. So the paramedics will keep going as well.
Lastly, what amount of knowledge do you think should be incorporated into the theory test?
I don't know if you've done a first aid course, Nick, or a CPR course.
No, I have not.
But I just was going to say they're pretty straightforward. Usually you're trained within a day to get the practical skills. So in terms of theory, you wouldn't need a lot. I would say, you know, a handful of questions just to go through the steps, and perhaps the next stage is incorporating bringing along a certificate or providing a certificate to say that you've done the course and are qualified.
Thanks for your input, Doctor. Thanks for the work you do. Daniel Tardo is a cardiologist and clinical research fellow at St George's Hospital in Tooting, London. Let's get to calls on this. Zahid is in Marylebone. Now, you've done CPR. Is that right, Zahid?
Yes. Good morning, Nick. I have. And this was, in fact, a long time ago. I applied for a driving license in Germany.
Ah.
And I did my written test. You have to score 100% in the written test, just by the by.
You cannot recall any of the questions.
You don't get 100%.
Can you recall any of the questions?
It would be normal sort of, pertaining to traffic rules, right of way,
I thought you meant on CPR. Yeah. No.
1 second. I was coming to that, but just telling you that how particular they are about this.
Yes.
So the not just CPR, but first aid, you had to do a 2-day course to obtain a certificate before a license was issued to you.
Hmm. Okay.
This is anybody applying for a driving license to drive in
Germany. And were you subsequently tested on it on the day of your driver's test or theory test?
This was a 2-day course.
Were you then asked questions when you did your theory test as well or not?
No, not on that. The theory test was purely driving related, traffic related, road sense related, right of way, etc.
Is it your understanding that every German who passes their driving test has to do this then?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And this was 1984.
Okay.
So and we're talking a good 41 years ago.
Bringing it in the UK, you're in favour?
Absolutely. I think the hazard these days with all the cyclists, all the electronic sort of platforms, mm-hmm. On two wheels, and the number of pedestrians, etc., it is an absolutely essential thing. I mean,
have you ever had to do it, lastly, since learning it? Have you ever had to give...
Never been tested.
Never been tested. Safe driving, Zahid. Thank you for your experience from Germany. Kevin's in Windsor. You're a paramedic. Is that right?
Yeah, hi. Yeah, good morning, yeah.
So you've done CPR probably more times than you can count.
Hundreds, unfortunately.
Mm. Do they always survive?
No, unfortunately not. There's not a particular number that will survive or not, but I believe in the UK it's 10% out of hospital resuscitations survive. But yeah, if you go to parts of Europe, I believe Denmark, it's 20%. And the only reason it's 20% is because of similar circumstances to this. You must learn CPR at school, and you must have CPR for your driving license.
You learn CPR at school in Denmark?
A lot of European schools now, countries that are teaching first aid and CPR. I said to your colleague there, early education is saving lives.
Let me ask you this, how long is the longest you've had to go giving CPR?
Probably approaching an hour.
You've been physically pushing on someone's chest like that for an hour?
Yeah, and we shocked them probably 10, 15 times, plus drugs, etc.
You must be exhausted.
You get exhausted on your own after 5 minutes. So the thing that we do, rotate round in a team.
Oh, I see.
And
right.
As you're counting, you count out loud up to 25, 26. And when we come up to 30, I take over and you rotate round. But if you've got a shirt on, or something, you're dripping wet.
I'm absolutely tired. Pouring sweat. Did that person make it?
Yes, I did, yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Unfortunately, we don't get a lot of feedback from the patients, and we don't get a lot of
If you saved my life, I'd come and find you. I'd give you a bottle of scotch if you saved my life.
Yeah, I can't name people, but there was one gentleman that was very poorly, and we thought he was clinically dead, and he survived. And the doctor and I that had done the resuscitation, he invited us to his wedding.
Oh, did you go?
No, unfortunately not. No, we didn't. We thought professional standards, do we attend, do we not? But he made a full recovery after 13 weeks on neurosurgery.
Thanks for the job you do, brave bloke. Imagine dripping with sweat an hour with colleagues, keeping a guy's heart going. We'll have more calls on that. Raphael, you want to talk to me about these FRCs, facial recognition cameras, and you'll be the first caller on that as well. 9:45, LBC News headlines read by Thomas Watts.
Ministers have welcomed a push for police forces to release more information about suspects' backgrounds. Police facial recognition vans are to be rolled out in 7 more areas of England. And Sir Keir Starmer is due to take part in virtual talks ahead of Donald Trump's Alaska summit with Vladimir Putin. LBC weather, another warm and sunny day with a few thunderstorms later, a high of 33 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The A12 remains closed northbound between junctions 18 at Danbury and 19 at the Boreham Interchange after that car was on fire earlier. There are lengthy delays on the approach and southbound as well, and also on the surrounding routes, especially through Chelmsford. In Brent Cross, the North Circular Road westbound, extremely busy heading towards Staples Corner. It's because of all the debris across the road after that car overturned. It means the exit slip road is closed, and there's also delays on the M1 southbound to the Staples Corner roundabout. In South Norwood, Manor Road remains closed in both directions for the emergency works. That's causing delays. And on the underground, the Victoria Line can't run between Walthamstow Central and Highbury and Islington.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
Is releasing more data, including ethnicity, about suspects in serious crimes a surrender to the dark forces dominating public discourse or a solution?
James O'Brien on LBC.
The holiday park industry is in the spotlight after thousands of holiday park homeowners lost what they...
You've heard it in the news. Holiday park homeowners being hit with sudden site fee increases, fake resale promises, and dramatic losses in the value of their holiday homes. The Holiday Park Advice Centre could help you get compensation if you were missold. Contact the Holiday Park Advice Centre today. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060973, LBC.
You're driving down the back roads of Tuscany. The sun's setting, the wind's in your hair. You're playing your favourite tunes. No, not that one. Much better. Could life be any sweeter? Of course it can. With the money you saved by comparing car hire prices through Kayak, you've got more to spend on some fresh, creamy gelato. Mmm, we'll take due scoops, per favore. Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
Body pain might not sound like this.
Oh.
Or this.
Oh.
But it might sound like this.
I'm fine.
Hiding your body pain behind a smile? Let us help. With up to 12 hours of uninterrupted muscle and joint pain relief. Voltarol, the joy of movement. Voltarol Joint and Back Pain Relief 2.3% gel contains diclofenac diethylammonium. Always read the label.
Outlet shopping at the O2. Get up to 70% off RRP on over 60 designer brands, including Nike, Adidas, Levi's, Sunglass Hut, the cosmetics company store, Le Creuset, and more. Plus, why not make a day of it with over 30 bars and restaurants, a cinema, bowling, interactive football, and more. There's so much to do at the O2 this summer. Find us at North Greenwich, just 15 minutes from central London. Search Outlet Shopping at the O2 to start planning your visit.
Pump six in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
Okay.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Have I won a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6.
T's and C's apply, subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
At ulizprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulizprosperity.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's get straight to Raphael in Woodford. You've been hanging on, I'm grateful to you. Facial recognition cameras, an advance or a concern? Which is it for you and why? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Sorry, please forgive me, I might be a bit nervous. I'm all for them.
Yeah.
I had one thing to talk about, now on your news, I've had two things to talk about.
Oh, okay.
The news talks about mentioning the ethnicity of people. I don't think that's important. I don't think telling me on a news report that someone is a South African or a Kiwi doesn't mean a difference to me, whether they are white or Asian or black.
If you recall, were you living in this country a year ago?
Yeah, I was. Yeah.
You'll recall the Southport killings and the subsequent riots.
Yeah.
That was because of the false belief, that the murderer was an asylum seeker who'd sneaked into this country on a boat. And that false information gained weight and the riot started. This is, in part, meant to combat that, Raphael. Are you in pain?
I'm just thinking. If the news report tells me that the guy who committed,
we're going to talk about cameras, but it is important that instead of people thinking, God forbid, there was another Southport. Oh, it's an asylum seeker. Oh, it's a Muslim asylum seeker. Oh, let's start bashing up mosques. No, it's someone who was born in Wales. So I think it's important.
I think that's important to say. Now, some people would say, what
gives the police the right to take your picture as you're walking through Woodford today?
Well, if I'm walking through, that's a scenario. I'm walking through Woodford. It's 11 o'clock at night. I'm walking through the Woodford. The cameras pick me up, and on the other side of the road, the cameras pick up someone who's been connected to a murder. I am convicted murderer.
Yep.
Right. So now, where's my? They got to protect my human right against him.
Well, only if he seeks, of course, to come after you in an aggressive fashion.
That's exactly. But the cameras could pick that up.
But I mean, they're already filming him anyway. Bear in mind, we have more cameras in this country.
Exactly. I don't understand the argument. But you walk outside and you've got cameras everywhere.
Yeah,
but from the minute you leave your house, you are filmed.
Okay, just imagine there's someone equally good looking as you, Raphael, who is wanted for murder or rape, and the first thing you know is you are very aggressively stopped by police officers because they believe you're a murderer. You subsequently prove that no, I'm actually the really nice Raphael. I'm not the man who looks like Raphael, the well-known murderer. Are you relaxed about that?
Yeah, I'm fine.
What, you might get, well, not nicked, you might get detained unfairly.
No, but they all realise, but they would know who I am. I mean, you know, they already know, they've got everything.
Well, doesn't that worry you, that they've got everything?
No, I'm European, so I've had to go through a whole process of settlement and all that kind of stuff. Hmm. So the government have all my information already.
Okay.
They have it.
All right, so you're relaxed about it. Raphael, I know you won't get involved in crime, so you'll be safe. Thank you for your input on both those stories. Should we talk CPR and someone who's actually done it? Andrea, in Hartford, what were the circumstances?
Hello. My husband and I were... We live just in Hertfordshire. We're over in Northern Ireland. My husband was working. Early one morning, 7:30, just dropped like a stone.
How old was he?
He was just before his 60th birthday.
Right.
Literally about 5 days before.
Good Lord.
You were in the same house
or something. You're in the bathroom.
It was an Airbnb. It was in the bathroom. Good friends of ours who are pro golfers were in the room in the Airbnb next door, but they couldn't hear me shouting for help. So straight away, it was like straight onto the emergency services. And as soon as we established, obviously, he's the colour of his skin and his lips going blue.
Hang on, talk me through that. White skin and blue lips, was that it?
Yeah, it was. It's really hard to describe the colour of his skin. It was just like hot, you know, it's like, it was just very pale, very clammy, and his lips were already starting to go blue. And I realised it wasn't a recovery position sort of situation. So spoke to the emergency services, and they said, right, you're going to have to start CPR. So I started straight away.
Had you learnt it?
Right. So I use this expression quite a lot. Funny enough, I heard you say it the other day. You learn by osmosis. It's on the TV. It's on Casualty. It's on 24 Hours in A&E. It's all these programmes. Yeah. You see it on adverts. You don't actually realise how much you absorb. But yes, I had done first aid training and CPR training, but millions of years ago.
Right.
Well, so,
millions. Yeah.
Well, not, yeah. Well, but you know what I'm saying. But a long time ago. Mm. So, I just started the CPR compressions until the paramedics arrived. So it was about 15 minutes I was doing it for until the paramedics arrived. And then they just took over. They did the
question.
Drugs. They did the, yes. The
when you're saving your husband's life, did you know it was working? Or did you see colour come back to his face, his lips?
No.
So you don't know whether you're winning or losing, do you?
No. And I just couldn't stop until the people who were the professionals could take over. I was never going to stop, even if I was just flogging a dead horse, literally. Do you know what I mean? I don't, it sounds
flogging
awful.
A dead husband, yeah.
Yeah, well, if you knew my husband, if you met him, you'd know what I mean. I had no idea if what I was doing was working, but if it was sufficient to keep the blood pumping through the brain... or the oxygenated
blood.
Sorry,
this is the most ridiculous question I'm going to ask, but how do you open the front door to your Airbnb if you've got to keep compressing your husband's
heart? weirdly, it had been really hot, and there was a stable door, so we'd actually had the top half of the stable door open. Just
how long have you got? So I'm thumping away on my colleague's chest,
yeah,
right? And we have a security door in these studios, and the CPR, yeah, sorry, the paramedics arrive. They're not going to get through the door unless I go and press the buzzer. No. How long can I leave him?
So, pass. But okay. I spoke to the, when I spoke, I would say you just leave as long as you need to get somebody
to get
in
the door.
But when,
yeah,
when I spoke to the dispatcher on the other end of the phone, you know, she just said, and since I've read about it subsequently, anything, you start to sort of, anything, I'm not going to make myself clear, 5 minutes. If you really get things going within the first 5 minutes.
You've got a chance.
Yeah.
What,
but
how did your husband say thank you? Did he buy you a nice emerald ring?
Would you... I'm still waiting.
How long ago was
so
it?
He thanks... It's, funnily enough, it was exactly 3 years ago on the 15th of this month.
Right, where is he? Is he in the room now?
No, he's probably... I don't know where he is, actually, because I'm pulled over on this side
What's
of the road.
Name?
Stephen Bond.
Stephen Bond, you've got until the... What did you say? The 15th of August, did you say? Right, you've got 2 days to get your wife a suitable gift for saving a life. Stephen Bond, I will be checking. Lots of love to your husband. Andrea, take care of yourself. Great story and well done. Well done. Stephen Bond, you have 2 days. David's in Oxford. You're on the radio, David. What can you... Oh, you
Thank
run
you very
some
much, Nick.
Code Blue. What's Code Blue?
Right, so I lost four of my very close friends to cardiac arrest.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
All young, fit men under 46 years of age.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I was then on the wrong golf course on the wrong day, and there was a scream for help, and I ended up pumping a young lad for 9 minutes.
Right.
And by the grace of God, I didn't know whether I saved this lad or not.
Right.
And the following day, I got a phone call, and the lady said, are you David Sullivan? And she said, I'm X's partner. And I just burst into tears.
Oh,
I went, I'm sorry, I'm
life.
Sorry. I didn't. And she went, don't be sorry. He's sitting up in bed. And that changed my life forever, Nick. From being a roofer, I'm very proud that now I lecture around the world. I lecture to Formula One on cardiac survival.
Wow.
We've just put through a proposal to the Mayor of London and to the government where we have got fully funded an organisation and all the trainers to teach 1.1 million children in London over the age of 8 how to be a lifesaver.
And you've taken a defibrillator to Everest?
Yes, my son Freddie and I, a defibrillator is a great bit of kit.
Right.
And bearing in mind around 80% of cardiac arrests happen in the evening.
Right.
So having a defibrillator in the office is no good. So the best place to put it is on the outside of buildings. Dentist, I'm coming after you. But anyway, you put them on the outside of buildings. And to do that, a defibrillator has to be kept at an ambient temperature.
Right.
Because if it gets too cold, the pads will turn to gel and they won't stick on the patient.
But I've got 20 seconds. What happened at the top of Everest or halfway up Everest?
I took the kit up there and within a week of it being there, Nick, it saved a young French lady's life.
I mean, that's... I put a defibrillator on Everest and it saved a life. It's the title of my next album. David, great work that you're doing, creating Lifesavers Organisation. I hope you get central or local funding. I'm done. I think people should take the CPR conversation on. There's so many stories to be done, but I'm done. James O'Brien's the other side of the news here on LBC. I'm with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and if you do not currently dine on an unleavened diet of anti-immigration scaremongering and hideous othering, then you probably find this story as fascinating as I do. And I use the word fascinating advisedly. The government is issuing guidelines to police that they should, in some circumstances, issue more biographical detail of people suspected of committing serious crimes. I think the rationale behind it is to puncture the potential claims of cover-up, the lies that have been told in the past about the authorities deliberately misleading or keeping information from the public. But pandering to liars rarely works out well. Will it this time?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
from Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock. Keir Starmer is due to co-chair virtual talks ahead of Donald Trump's summit with Vladimir Putin on Friday. The Prime Minister will hold discussions with Kiev's European allies this lunchtime. He'll then be joined by Mr. Trump and the Vice President, J.D. Vance. Ukraine's President Zelensky has warned he will reject any proposal to hand over the Donbass region to Moscow. He's raised concerns about what could be agreed in his absence in Alaska this week.
It's impossible to talk about Ukraine without Ukraine, and no one will accept that. But they cannot agree on anything about Ukraine without us. I truly believe and hope that the US president understands and realizes that.
Police chiefs are being encouraged to disclose the ethnicity and nationality of some people who are charged. The new interim guidelines follow a series of controversial cases in which authorities were accused of covering up suspects' backgrounds. It's hoped the change will combat misinformation on social media. The Shadow Work and Pensions Secretary, Helen Whateley, has welcomed the move.
We need to see more transparency from the police about the ethnicity of suspects. Clearly, there has been suspicion about the police withholding information in the past when it's been very much on a case-by-case basis. So they should be leaning in to be sharing information with the public because people deserve to know as much information as is possible to give.
Privacy groups have criticised an expansion of facial recognition technology by police in England. The Home Office says the cameras will be used to identify serious offenders with appropriate safeguards in place. The camera vans are to be rolled out in 7 force areas following trials in London and South Wales. Learner drivers are to be quizzed on their life-saving skills in an update to the theory test. Questions about CPR and defibrillators will be added from early next year. The Driver and Vehicle Standards Agency says motorists are often first on the scene when someone suffers a cardiac arrest. The Treasury is reportedly looking at ways to raise more revenue from inheritance tax. It's understood the rules around gifting, allowing people to pass on assets tax-free before they die, could be tightened. In the city, the FTSE 100, a short time ago, was at 91.65. That's up 17. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather, another warm and sunny day for most places. A few thunderstorms possible later. A high of 33 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after 10 and, I'll ask you. Can you remember, we had a caller about a year ago who was from an Eastern European country, and to my shame I can't remember which one, but there was a phrase, like a figure of speech in her home country about having your destiny decided in a room that you weren't in. We were talking about Ukraine at the time, and maybe, was she Hungarian perhaps? It was a brilliant line, and I can't remember it, so I am, what do they call it? Crowdsourcing. I'm crowdsourcing that question. This is The Hive Mind, in action, live on LBC. In fact, it's The Hive Mind every day, isn't it? Because we muddle together towards answers or pursue illumination, not always successfully. And to that end, I should tell you that if you try to send me a WhatsApp this morning, you will not be successful. Something is wrong with the system, so do not WhatsApp me. You can still text me on 84850, and you can, of course, still call me, although it would be a bit weird if you did that, because you don't know what question I'm asking you yet. Oh, go on, I'll tell you anyway. 03456060973. So there are two cases currently that seem to me to be profoundly relevant to the police's decision, or police being told that they can reveal the ethnicity of a suspect in a high-profile case. There is one that has concluded and seen the culprit sent to jail, hopefully for the rest of his life. And there is one that has not concluded, but in which the ethnicity of the suspect was revealed very quickly to the public. But we can't talk in detail about that, because obviously the case is yet to conclude, and the rules governing that sort of thing, as you well know by now, are very strict. I got distracted then by the number of people who pay more attention to this programme than me or any of my colleagues do, because the quantity of people who have remembered exactly what the line was and what the country for context was is extraordinary. I'll share it with you shortly because I want to get this up and running first. The policing minister has said that the government will want police to release these details in most cases, in what she welcomed as a positive step. And I honestly don't know, because the problem with people like me, how long have you got? But if you are not, and it may be that there's something wrong with me, but I don't spend my life chomping at the bit about immigration, and I don't spend my life encouraging you to chomp at the bit about immigration. It's a lonely place in the UK media, but it is not an unpopular one, it must be said, to not dedicate day upon day upon day, page upon page upon page, to coded invitations to hate people based upon their origins, on their ethnicity or on their arrival status in this country. So the dangers of that discourse only really bubble up in our lives occasionally, very occasionally. I am, for example, not more perturbed or disgusted by a crime committed by a brown man than I am when the same crime is committed by a white man. Again, that seems to be quite a rare position to adopt in the UK media at the moment, and indeed in UK politics, where men are queuing up to pretend that they care about women's rights or women's safety, even as they invite somebody locked up for battering his own ex-girlfriend to sit alongside them in the House of Commons. It's extraordinary. And Robert Jenrick joining the chorus this weekend by expressing deep concern about his own daughters being potential victims of crimes committed by foreigners or immigrants or asylum seekers, as if the danger of being a victim of a crime committed by, well, most likely, of course, in the context of sexual abuse and child sexual abuse, it would be somebody known to the victims and often a family member or just a white bloke. Apparently that's less worrying, that's less scary to people like Honest Bob Jenrick, but it isn't to me. Some polling out today saying the number of women who were worried walking the streets, the number of women who were worried when they're walking the streets, anyone who's ever paid any attention to any of this will tell you, is always high because our streets, after dark in particular for lone women, have never been safe, never been completely safe. But here we are. The only occasions in which this dismal discourse reaches the lives of people who aren't either committed to fostering hatred or victims of the determination to foster hatred, the only time it happens, the only time it bubbles over, is when people deliberately seek to incite violence and to provoke terrible behaviour on our streets after a crime has been committed by somebody believed to be foreign. Oh man, how depressing is that? It's 2025. We're sitting here talking as if it were the most matter-of-fact and ordinary thing in the world about people trying to cause violence on our streets, trying to incite pogroms, I'm afraid is an accurate word, because a crime is believed to have been committed by somebody who is foreign. Extraordinary. I was reading David Aranovich's rather splendid Substack blog this morning, and he has details of precisely how Jewish people were maligned and demonised in identical ways in 1930s Germany to the ways in which Muslim people are being denigrated and maligned in this country at this point in our history. That's why the date depresses me. Somebody's alleged ethnicity is going to be used to incite riots on our streets.